There is no better place.
It's time to talk.
The only way to get anything done in Cork is to go on to the Neil
Prendeville.
Right, you know? Fair play. Talk to Neil
Prendeville. That's a Cork threat at this stage, I think.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
I just love Cork people.
Conversation that matters.
Be part of the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. The front page of the Examiner this morning brings it all home. Other newspapers, of course, talk about it in quite some detail, and that is the ongoing issues in Palestine, in Gaza. The headline in the Examiner this morning says, famine imminent in Gaza, if it hasn't already actually hit, because people are already starving. I was looking at some video footage of the weekend of the EU's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell. He wasn't holding back, and he was saying that what was the greatest open-air prison before Israel's bombardment had now turned into the greatest open-air graveyard. The Examiner this morning says that Israel is being accused of using starvation as a weapon of war. They're the words of the EU's foreign policy chief. Starvation as a weapon of war, as food shortages in areas of Gaza have reached famine levels, with mass deaths now imminent without an immediate ceasefire. It's hard to believe that this is all happening on all of our watch, isn't it? And yet opportunities then that are given, Leo Varadkar made the papers of the weekend because many were criticizing that he didn't go hard enough against Joe Biden when he was actually sitting in the Oval Office with him. So front pager making the Examiner this morning. And it's awfully, awfully sad because we kind of see it unfolding before our very eyes, don't we? Famine imminent in Gaza. And I add on to that the maybe another added headline, if it hasn't already started. The front page making this morning's Mail talks of something that isn't uncommon on Leaside, because we've spoken about it on this program in the past, and that is moving elderly patients from their hospital beds in the middle of the night. That was a shocking revelation on this show a couple of weeks back. From family members here on Leaside. But the story in the Mail this morning says that five elderly patients were removed from their beds in one night at the most overcrowded hospital in the country. The HSE despite what the Mail is saying, insist that it's not a policy to do so. But the practice of this kind of carry-on has been very much witnessed by medics themselves, who said that, patients being removed like this is cruel and disgusting. These are geriatric emergency medicine beds from University Hospital Limerick after 11 o'clock or in the wee hours of the morning. Headline being, hospitals remove elderly patients at night. You talk about cruelty. There's a breaking news story overnight from America that's very, very disturbing. You got to wonder when you read stories like this. A U.S. mother, her 16-month-old daughter died because the mother left home and left the 16-month-old baby in the playpen for 10 days last summer. It's hard to even fathom it. She went off on holidays. She's been sentenced to life in prison with no chance ever of getting parole. It's a story out of Cleveland, Ohio. She went on holidays to Puerto Rico in June of 2023 and returned 10 days later. I know it's very upsetting for anybody listening to this morning. I apologize for it. She returned 10 days later, found the girl wasn't breathing, 16-month-old child, not breathing inside in the playpen, and she calls 911. So the emergency responders arrive. They find the child extremely dehydrated and dead. Post-mortem examination said just that, starvation and severe dehydration. Awful, awful cruelty. Just senseless, really. Sentenced to life in prison with no chance of parole. Back on Leaside, a big Garda investigation going on. It's a story that makes the Examiner, the Echo. I'll talk to Barry Roach a little later on, but Ralph Regalin, Barry Roach of the Irish Times, about Ralph Regalin, the Independent, this morning talks about the appeal from Gardaí looking for witnesses from an assault down in Cove, a place called Newtown Road. It was a car park down there where a man was slashed with a machete, apparently, on Friday. During the attack, the man in his 30s suffered stab or slash wounds to the leg. Now, it's understood that the slash wound from the machete was so deep that there was serious loss of blood. A very deep gash across the lower leg, partially severing the arteries and veins. It was in the car park in Newtown Road. He was taken to CUH. One line of investigation into this, and we'll talk more about it a little later on this morning. One line of investigation is the man may have been the target as a part of a dispute over money. And Barry Roach is suggesting in the Irish Times this morning that he may have gone to the car park to meet somebody, and then it turned violent and off, you know, it's awfully sad. Another loss of life on Cork roads, with the Echo this morning reporting a person who died in an early morning single vehicle collision yesterday morning. It was a fatal single vehicle collision just after 7 o'clock yesterday morning on the outbound lane on the Lower Glanmire Road, that straight stretch of road that runs down the Tivoli one. Awfully sad. Fire brigades there, Gardaí in there, everything yesterday morning. Somebody passed away. The story of nitazene, you know, this is the synthetic opioid that's leading to an awful lot of overdoses, lots in Dublin and also here in Cork, and also in our prisons. Like this morning, the Examiner's reporting, and I was reading it online, of a drug-related death of an inmate in Cork prison last week. They're saying that that death of the prisoner could be linked to nitazene, the synthetic opioid that's much more dangerous, much more powerful than heroin or anything like it. It's one of a number of suspected drug overdoses in the two jails in the previous week, but the sad death of an inmate. Unfortunately, drugs are still getting in to Cork prison. There is another one then, with regards to prisons, that made the Sunday World yesterday, because they are adding up all of the different television sets that we have in Irish jails and the channels that are available. Now, there are two lines of thought on this. One is that, and I tend to always believe that if somebody's taken away your freedom, where you can't walk out the front door of your home, or you're not allowed to do what you want when you want, that's punishment enough for anybody in jail, that they're completely controlled. Others would suggest, yeah, but the jails should be tougher, and giving prisoners Sky Sports or Netflix or 50 or 60 or 70, 80 different channels to choose from is a step too far. However, the prison services themselves, I was reading at the weekend, say that it actually keeps everything, you know, calmer in jails when television's available and Sky Sports is available and Netflix. And if you have happier prisoners, for want of a better term, you have a happier jail environment. But they spent over 550 grand last year on new TVs. Apparently they bought a load of Walker 24-inch TVs at €156 each, excluding VAT, because they bought them in bulk, because they won't be able to buy those ones. Apparently, they're the television of choice for the prison service. So they had to buy a lot of them, like 450 of them for Dublin's Mountjoy, 408 for Weedfield Prison. Don't actually have the figure for Cork, but I'm quite sure it's fairly hefty. But it's interesting because the year just gone, 2023, 551,000 on televisions, Sky and Netflix. And if you look at 2021, it was €320. So it's a big increase of €220,000 in the space of two calendar years. But anyway, in total, 2,304 televisions in cells in Ireland, costing a total of just over 550 grand. Meanwhile, and this story has been going on for at least 7 years, I know we talk about Noonan's Road and we talk about St Finbar's Road and areas like that in the south side, but the carry-on of the council with regards to their tenants, and they are tenants up in Ardvalia and they are tenants up in Glenamoy Lawn and Mayfield, it's nearly a decade now since they've been dealing with a shocking bad heating system. They put in, I don't know what they put in, some sort of air-to-air heat pump systems in Ardvalia and Glenamoy, and the residents since then have been absolutely frozen every single winter. And they then have to spend a fortune heating their own homes with, you know, other kind of pieces of heating equipment. There could be plug-in radiators, there could be fans, there could be super SIRs, because the heating system, and like, it goes on year after year after year. And here we are again, just about to come out of the winter, the cold temperatures of 2024, and they've had to go through another winter of it. I mean, like, we talk about private landlords, we talk about, you know, crazy rental prices and the whole issues regarding the crisis in the rental market, but yet Cork City Council all too often are found wanting with their own tenants, and this has just gone, like, it's at least 8 years of this. If you do have meters in your home, you might want to be aware that smart meters They're supposed to, smart meters are linked to mobile phone technology, right? So if you have a smart meter at home, it's constantly sending a signal, relaying information about your electricity use. But is it though? The Independent is the story this morning talking about a warning for customers about malfunctioning smart meters and that you could well be overcharged. Now, I did see a paragraph somewhere that ESB Networks admitted that up to 80,000 meters may be suffering from intermittent connectivity issues due to weak mobile phone signals, but they're denying that they've been installing faulty batches. There was a fellow in the paper, the Independent this morning, says that last summer his house was absolutely empty. There was no power being used, but yet he continued to get astronomical ESB bills across the summer. Go figure that one out. Anyway, it's an interesting story as to, you know, how much you use and how it's relayed back for the billing process. I mean, it's just with electricity, you know, you have to send readings for gas, and if you don't have a smart meter, you're advised for electricity to send readings as well. But when you look at fuel, right, I don't know whether you knew this, I didn't actually see any of these signs yet, but petrol stations with three or more fuel pumps have been told that they must start displaying a sign showing the difference in their prices, petrol, diesel, and the electric alternative. And they got to get those signs up within the next few weeks or they will be fined. Petrol station will be fined €500 if they fail to show a fuel price comparison poster. The current poster that's doing the round, apparently, says words to the effect of, the cost of travelling 100 kilometres with petrol is €10.04. The cost of travelling 100 kilometres with diesel is €8.95. The cost of travelling 100 kilometres with electric is €3.18. Now, clearly, this has all got to do with trying to encourage people to go electric and move away from petrol and diesel. So it's a kind of a shocking stat, isn't it? Just over €3 for an electric run of 100 kilometres and €10 for a petrol run of 100 kilometres. And if they don't start putting up those signs, it'd be interesting as well, you know, maybe I'm just thinking outside the box. Imagine if a petrol station had to say, petrol here is €1.71 a litre, but down the road you'll get it for €1.68. It's that kind of thing, isn't it? I mean, like, why would you want to be put up those kind of price comparisons when you sell petrol and diesel? There are other things then with regards to, this is more to do with shrinkflation, and it has to do with fairy. The box of fairy non-bio laundry powder. I mention this because marketing is very, very clever. The way that you can manipulate marketing. Now, I have no issue whatsoever with fairy bio. I'm sure that it's a great, great washing powder. It gives an impressive 65 washes per box. But how can it do that when they've shrunk the box from 4,225 grams down to 3,900 grams, but it still can do 65 washes? I mean, it's a magic box. Well, the reason is, it's kind of a sleight of hand. They've achieved it by reducing the recommended amount of powder that you use in each wash from 95 mils to 85 mils. Box has got smaller. The portion control of each wash has got smaller, but they still managed to get 65 washes from a box. Don't you just love it? Papers also this morning talk about issues on our trains, primarily, I suppose, the Cork-Dublin train, but also the Dublin to Drogheda train, apparently, which leaves a lot to be desired with the different things that people are complaining about. And it's drinking is the top complaint from passengers who've been texting Irish Rail, whether it's on the train, whether it's on the DART or the commuter or the intercity services. But here's a list of just a few because it's lengthy. So drinking alcohol, drunkenness, antisocial behaviour, followed closely by drug taking, smoking, abusive, racist, intimidating or threatening behaviour. These are the complaints lodged over the last 3 months to the middle of last year. The playing of music, listening to podcasts or videos at loud volume. That would wreck your head, wouldn't it, if you're sitting across from somebody? Also, dog poo, feet on seats, arguing about passengers taking other passengers' booked seats. It goes on then. God, a lengthy list. And then they give individual texts that people sent to Irish Rail. Drunk man, drinking wine, pouring wine all over a girl, hassling other women, Three men openly consuming and snorting what is clearly drugs in the carriageway. On and on it goes. The stuff that Irish Rail and its passengers have to put up with, huh? And the papers this morning talk about a tiny little public toilet over in Penzance on the beach in England. It is now on the market for €23,000. It's a tiny little room with a loo. Why do I say that? Because it is a disused public toilet. Now, it's the most gorgeous looking beach. Would you imagine if you bought that for €23,000 and then you were allowed to turn it into your own little tiny domain or home and your own little castle on the beach? It's the cheapest seaside property in Cornwall and it's got the most beautiful views. And you know that there are many of those equivalents all over Ireland on our beaches. There's one up on, you know, Keem up on Achill. I think it might have been recently voted as, I know I'm exaggerating a little bit when I say this, maybe it was voted as the most beautiful beach in the world. It's probably up there. But on it is this little, I don't know what it was in former times. Was it owned by the Coast Guard or whatever? But it sits there right on the beach. It's all closed up. It was used for shots and filming of the Banshee of Inisherin, but it's just sitting there closed and locked up. And any time I see it, I'm quite sure there must be other ones in Irish beaches, I'm thinking that would make the most beautiful cafe or coffee shop or home for somebody, if they deepen up pockets. And the papers also talk about people who, this is very good because it talks about decluttering your home, sending things to recycling and just getting rid of all of the junk that you have in your lives, because you'll feel better. It can improve your mental health. It can it can also unclutter not just the home, but your mind and bring on a wonderful sense of calmness. I mean, is it any wonder that when you go into places like, say, for instance, I was reading recently, if you go into, you know, a spa, right? If you go into any kind of health or therapy setting, they're always very, very decluttered. If you go into, say, for instance, for a massage or things like that, you'll find that everything is just absolutely, you know, decluttered, calm, with, you know, flat, empty surfaces. Makes you kind of breathe a little more calmly, doesn't it? A decluttered environment can declutter the mind. I mention that because sometimes when we do declutter, I'll come back to this story later in the week, I think decluttering, because we're actually going through a big declutter and recycle at home and have been. It's amazing the amount of stuff that you just wouldn't miss, particularly clothing. But, you know, as you declutter, you want to be very careful that you're not giving away stuff that could be very, 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 very rare and also very expensive. Like, there's a story in the Echo this morning that talks about it's not the Echo, actually. I think it's one of the Red Tops. It's an incredibly rare Beatles single. If you don't know what a single is, way before CDs or MP3s or downloads or Spotify, people bought albums. They're on vinyl. You had the album, which had maybe, you know, 8, maybe 10 songs in it, and a single, which ordinarily had a song on both sides. So a very, very rare 1963 first edition, first pressing of the Beatles' Please Please Me, sold recently for £4,200, nearly €5,000. And it was spotted by a shop worker in the cancer research charity in London. They are trained, apparently, to spot things that might have a high financial value, because you never know what's going in and out of a charity shop. And this incredibly rare Beatles vinyl record found its way in because somebody was clearly decluttering but didn't realise they decluttered and gave away a £5,000 first edition Beatles single. I bet there's other people out there with stories like that. Text 0868104106. Maybe stuff that you bought in a flea market or a charity shop or a secondhand store or whatever the case may be, and it turned out to be very rare and perhaps even into the bargain, but not necessarily so, very, very, very rare and, you know, worth a lot of money. Text 0868104106.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
We live in interesting times. Some of those stories I'll return to throughout the course of the morning. But can I just recap on, say, going back the last few years, and unfortunately in the not too distant past as well. 6 weeks ago, we had a taxi driver who was attacked and his car stolen out in Kilcully. June 8, he was mugged in Glanmire. John Constant has been attacked several times, including getting a stiletto in the eye and a broken bottle held to his neck. He's been on the air with me in a couple of times. He was subject of a very bad attack down in the eastern suburbs there some years back. These are all taxi drivers, incidentally. He also had a broken bottle held to his neck. Then last year, a man was jailed for 2.5 years for an attack on a taxi driver involving a bottle of rum and a hammer. The things that taxi drivers have put up with. Another man got an 18-month sentence for an attack on a taxi driver in Blarney after a row over a fare resulted in kicks and punches. All too often, of course, we don't hear of what taxi drivers have to put up with on a daily or a nightly basis as they try and get people safely from A to B. But we do have an opportunity this morning to hear another one of those stories. I'm joined by taxi driver Kadir, who joins me by phone. Kadir, good morning.
Hi, good morning, Neil. How are you?
I'm good. You're not, I know, and I can understand why. If we cast our minds back to, you were working Friday night, March 15th, Friday night. Yeah, busy weekend, I'd say. Yeah. So a lot of fares. Where did you pick up?
Neil, I just picked the fare is, this is a pub located in Glenmire, the castle.
Okay. The castle. You picked up at the castle on Friday night. So was it late?
Yeah, it's around after 12:45 a.m. in the morning, late night.
Okay. Tell us in your own words what happened.
Neil, this is actually, I was already dropping one passenger over there and coming back to the city. There is a flat down on the castle. And the passenger, look, this is my job. I was doing my job, they just pulled me over there, stopped me and asked me, there is a two stop if you can drop in, one in the local Glenmire and one in the cross, White Cross,
Okay, so I just want to be sure now, because the line isn't great. So you dropped, yeah, and then you were flagged down in the area how many people?
There were three people, In the beginning, there is only one woman was there, and she flagged me down and asked me about, the dropout in White Cross and the local Glenmire area.
Okay.
And we agreed. I say, okay, this is my job, And but they just, they're taking, open the door, everything, they jump in, and I just requesting them because I was stopping all the traffic behind me. And anyhow, he said, oh, yes, I'm coming. And they jump in the car. And after that, they just took the one passenger who already was looking very sick, into the pub. And they just put me in the car and all right, we're just going towards to the destination, where I have to drop them. But anyhow, just a couple of minutes later, and I was looking there because he was looking weird looking to me, just doing all things in the car, and I was observed already he was going to be sick. And suddenly, he just he's sick in the car and requested to stop the car in the middle of the road, and I just requested, please don't sick in the car, please. And I just stop a car and just take out the person, but anyhow, he vomited in the car on the door.
He vomited in the car.
Yeah. He got sick in the car, he vomited in the car. But anyhow, we saved the car and the panels and the door was only dirty. On that time, definitely, man, you are on the work. You get so annoyed, when some people, because you doesn't know the pain of the washing of the car.
Yeah, I can imagine. It must be. Have you had to do it in the past?
As many times it's happened, That's why I'm saying with the experience, you can understand that, man, weekends mostly car wash is closed. And when somebody is sick in the car, the vomiting, the smell is bad.
Yeah.
It's not, I cannot do a work anymore,
That's it.
The soiling charge is there. Most of the people, they don't pay.
So,
hello.
No, you're grand. I can hear every word you're saying. So, you're in the car, your man gets sick. Who else is in the car with him at this stage?
On that time, there was a woman and his friend in that car, And we are the four people in the car.
So, what happened next?
Nothing. I just dropped him in the car, his house, in the first stop. And she just requesting me, oh, there is a babysitter in my house. And just took her and dropped his house and dropped him in the White Cross. I just simply refused. I said, listen, man, he's already sick in the car, I'm not happy for that. All that thing has happened. Oh, I'm not charging you any kind of thing. You just pay the fare and you can order the other taxi later when he got recovered.
So you asked them to get out where your man got out, the guy who got sick. And you didn't ask, you didn't insist on a soiling fee for cleaning, which is, I don't know.
Nothing. I have like all the dash cam videos, you know. I say I'm not charging you any kind of thing. Anyhow, whatever, I'm not like a right now. I'm not sure, you know, I'm just going to give you a ride. I'm just simply request you. When you got recovered, okay, you just order the other taxi alright, and you can take a ride. Right now you just pay the fare and I'm ready to go. No, you promised me you have to. I said, look, I'm on the job. I have to do a job, you know, like right now. There is a lot of money hours. I cannot be busy of all the time because it's just like a couple of months because I remember that it's happened. Same thing with me. Like, I just give the favor. Is an old person. He's 70, 80 years old. Just give him a ride. It's just a small spin, you know. It took me 3 hours to get him out.
The elderly person.
Elderly person, the pubs ordered the taxi, he jumped in the car, and after that, it was raining, you know, the cold freezing weather, and the car was warm, heating was on, and he slept on. He slept in the car.
You couldn't wake
him? When I drove him, I couldn't wake him. He's sick in the car 3 to 4 hours. I called the guards, called the paramedic. They came in. He refused to do it because he's sick. He's very sick. 3 hours. He vomited, and all the paramedic staff, he just, like, treated him in the car, you know.
Oh my God!
That's why I'm saying my day is gone.
Okay, so on this night, I understand. But back to Friday night, your man has done what he's done in the car, gets out and goes in home. You're left with two in the car at this stage. You ask them to get out because the car has to go off the road. They can call another taxi. The taxi has been destroyed, and she refused. Is it?
Yeah, she refused. She just like threatening me, you know, like, I'm not paying you, I'm going to report you, auntie. I say, okay, you have a right, whatever you want to. Like, this is right now, I'm not in the position to give you a right anymore, you know, like, it's already car is bad, and I'm not feeling comfortable with you, you know, because how they were treating in the car. So, oh no, you this, oh you this, and I'm refusing to pay you. In that case, definitely, what we have to do? I have to report the guards, you know. I just called the girl, like, emergency call. While on the call, and she just like, oh, you locked me in. I said, this is a car, you know, until I'm not going to the parking mode, it's not going to be unlocked.
Was it locked? If you just slow down just a tiny bit. I know you're very worked up by what happened on Friday. But so was the car locked with him in it?
On that time, that's what I'm saying, because the car was a driving mode. Until I'm not in the parking, the car, you know that this is a new car. When you are going to the parking mode, then it's going to be automatically unlocked.
Okay.
It's every, like, you know, the central locking kind of thing.
So they couldn't stay? They couldn't get out, yeah.
Yeah. No, yeah. I just opened the door straight away. I say, you can go out. It's not a problem. You can go out. And I was busy with the guard, and I'm just telling the incident. I said, listen, they are making a trouble right now. And they just like, oh no, this, you lock me up, or you're this, and she just punched me in my face, you know, straight away.
Okay.
The lady.
Okay. Was she sitting next to you, or was she behind you? Was she in the back seat?
No, she was next to me, you know, in the passenger seat.
She just punched you into the face with her fist?
Yeah. She just punched me on my nose, you know, first. And I know that it wasn't, I just ignored that. He said, listen, ma'am, I don't need any kind of a trouble, and you can go out. No, you just jump out. I don't want any trouble, and keep a distance. And her husband was behind there. Oh, you this, or you this, because the guy is already was sick, you know. He just sick in there. He haven't, like, he's fainted. He have any kind of, how you call it, you know. But anyhow, he came in. Oh, you, why you call the guards, and this, and this, and this, and this, and start arguing happening. And he just, like, on that time, I just getting, because he's pushing the door, kicking on my door, and I just, he said, don't do any kind of thing with my car. You don't want to pay, no pay. You don't need to pay. Okay, you
just go. Was he outside the taxi at this stage, kicking the car door?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah,
he was outside. All the people was outside, the kicking the car doors, all that, like she jump in and she start making video. I say, okay, whatever you want to do, I don't need any trouble, you just go, keep away. We just go, you don't want to pay nobody. I'm just reporting because I have a right to report the guards, you know.
Right, okay.
And I'm doing my own work.
And she's filming you now at this stage. Is she filming you then?
She's filming me then, you know, like. But her husband came out. He opened my door, all right, and start arguing, you know, oh, you this, or you bastard, and whatever, you know, like, you know, the one, the drunk people, what's the behaviors you can expect it of them. And suddenly, like, I was on the phone, he just grabbed my collar, pushed me out, and after that, start punching, and the guy, other, I don't know, the third person who was sick in the car, he just jumped out, the both of them, choke my neck. And after, they just like 15 to 20 punches on my face, my jawline, my drapes. And after that, because I can't breathe, fell down. It was a really brutal attack on me. I never even expected, you know. I fainted, fell on the floor. And kicked me on my face, kicked me on my shoulder, ribs. And I am totally unconscious.
So they are now continuing to kick you when you're unconscious on the ground. And they are kicking your head.
Yes. They just kicked me two times on my head with the legs, punches on my ribs, shoulder, because the shoulder is very sore. Definitely after this incident, because I doesn't remember any kind of thing, because I fainted on the floor. And I just get a little wake up. I find myself in the, you know, the ambulance.
Yes, oh, so the next thing after you pass out, you're unconscious, the next thing you recall is in you're in an ambulance with paramedics.
Yeah, with the paramedics. I remember, you know, when I just wake up. And yes, the guard was there. He just only asked me, because all the bruises on my face and everything is lots of pain. I'm still fainting, you know. So
you're now being brought to hospital from the scene of the crime. Yeah. Okay, hold on. We'll pick up on part two of the conversation after the break. Text 0868104106.
Call Neil now. 0818104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Okay, I'll flip Kadir to WhatsApp, see if it might be a clearer line, because the story needs to be told. It was a pickup in Glanmire, two men and a woman. One guy gets sick in the back and destroys the back of it. And then, of course, there's a conversation begins as to, you know, please leave now, get another taxi, I'll have to take this off the road. She throws him a punch, fist into the side of the head, of course. And then after that, they get out and start kicking the car. Then they drag him out and lay into him, not just as he's standing up. Two guys attack him, kicking him and punching him in the head and the neck and the ribs, and down he goes. Then he's unconscious, and they continue to kick him into the head and the neck and the torso. He passes out unconscious. The next thing he remembers, he finds himself in the back of an ambulance. This is Friday night. So, Kadir, you head to the hospital, and I know you subsequently spent the weekend in the hospital. But tell me about your wife, because you obviously never went home, right? So therefore, she would have been very worried as to where you were. Pick up on that part of the story.
This is the thing, my wife, like, I know, remember that when the guards is came, you know, he just took me a little statement, because on that time I was pain. He said, are you able to speak? I just simply tell them, he said, look, there is a lots of pain in my head, you know. And he just agreed, oh yeah, he said, you have a lots of bruise and in your hair, in your face, you know, right now. Anyhow, just give me your name and number, or if you want to contact anybody. I just leave with him, like my wife number. I say, just contact with her and let her know, at least, like, she is not worried, you know. And it's okay. And after, they just took me on the hospital and they start treatment. But my wife, actually, she traced me out until morning. She just we finish work 3-4 a.m. in the morning, and we just go home, you know, like. But she wake up, she dropped the kids in the school and everything. Most of the time I dropped the kids in the school, you know. But she wake up, she was ringing there, because I left my phone in the car. On that time, I was not able to take my phone with me.
Yeah, so you were unconscious and were moved by ambulance. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying, because my phone just left in the car. And she's not able, like, she's tried to contact me in the morning, but she's not, you know, like, because nobody was answering my phone, because the phone in the car. But I leave the message with the guards, and guards is not even, just call her. He's not call her, not let her know, like, what is my situation. Anyhow, she traced my phone with my location, you know, like on the IDs, and she traced me on my Mayfield Garda station.
So she tracked the car to Mayfield Garda.
Yeah, she tracked the car, you know, on the phone, in the, like, on the iPhone, you know, you can trace the phone. And she tracked me. She went into the Garda station, and she find that, and she asked about me, like, over there, like, is my husband over there is missing, you know, his phone is looking, location is showing up here in the Garda station. And the first day doesn't know any kind of thing. He said, no, we don't know any kind of person in the in Garda station. And after he said, oh, he's a taxi driver. Oh, then, oh, yeah. Then they say, oh, yes, there is a guy, like a guy in the taxi driver. He was feeling dizzy while in the driving. So he just stopped the car, which one is shock for me. When she told me, she came into the hospital and she just like asked me what happened. I said, like, then I told her, like, all that's like a scan. I said, this has happened, actually. Oh, like, she just got so traumatized. But she told me, the Garda was telling her I was feeling dizzy. And she never mentioned, he said, the Garda never mentioned any kind of attack or nothing. She just simply was telling me, like, they told me that I was feeling dizzy. While in the driving, I stopped the car and just, like, called the ambulance and that's it.
Okay, that's an interesting interpretation on what actually did happen. Somewhere along the lines, wires must have got crossed or something. It's unfortunate that the Gardaí didn't call your wife after the attack, wasn't it, to let her know?
No.
Yeah, that
no.
was, yeah. Okay, yeah. That's a shame. That is a shame. It would have been an easy phone call to make. Yeah.
That's an ill. I'm just like, I am even in the shock. I'm traumatized. In the 2 days I was in the hospital, the multiple injuries, I was like suffering. But I even tried to contact with the guards as well, you know, like for myself, because the next day when I went to recover to collect my car, because I'm only able to drive, definitely is insurance of my, because they're not handing over anyone. And I even asked for the lady, like, hey, say, what is the update? I need to be updated. He said, I don't know anything. So, like, who was the sergeant there? You know, like, he's not here.
Yeah. Okay.
I say, but she, yeah. She confirmed me he will be contact with you for a further assistance and everything.
Okay, but would there be dash cam footage within the taxi?
Yeah, I do have a dash cam footage, you know, in the like up front, but there is a all recording over there. Unfortunately, they have a like a face over there, you know, the tiny face. They captured the face, but the recording, each and everything, the people can listen, you know, the guards can listen.
So can they see with the dash cam? You'd have cameras inside the taxi, wouldn't you? Of the
no, the cabin. That's the problem, you know. Like, is my bad luck. 2 days before, like my front camera, who's actually recording in the cabin one, there is a problem, and I already ordered the new one.
Okay, so you have no cab footage to show their faces.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay. How are you feeling with regards to the you know, the beating that you got? It was quite vicious. You must have a lot of bruising and swelling.
Neil, honestly, believe me, after that one, I just 2 days, 3 days, no, I'm just thinking what actually happened with me. We never expected, man. We are on the job, I know that, all the time, but this is my jawline and the head still bruised on my face. And the jawline is paining. And
You never know who's going to get into your taxi at any time of the day or night. You just don't know. You really are left wide open.
That's the things is the nightlife we are working there. It's a profession, you know. This is a profession of anyone we are doing with the loyal, with the job. We're doing our best. But with the time, this incident, a lot of incident is like happening, you know, as you mentioned, like 6 weeks before, the guy who actually is stole his taxi and broken that bottle on his neck.
Yes.
We are working hard, you know.
A good place for the Gardaí to start would be where you dropped them off. Was it a housing estate? Would you be able to recall where that was?
Sorry? It was kind of in the housing estate, you know, like is the first house of the housing estate.
Okay, so don't give out any address on air now, because there will be, you know, very, very nice people living in that housing estate as well. But at least you know, that is, you know the house, even.
I know the house, yeah.
Okay, well, that's a good start for a guard investigation, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's the thing, the Garda, I'm just waiting for that. The Garda will contact with me and for Tua. Even I try to contact with them and all the time, oh, he's not there, he's not working, he's there.
Okay, well, let us see if Mayfield Garda Station are actively investigating this, and if so, have they made any headway on it? Now, it is only since Friday. Are you back to work now, or would you be slow to go back or do nights again? Did you, you know, I have so many questions for you. Has the taxi been cleaned out and sanitized?
It's not yet.
Oh, man.
It's not yet. Problem is in Neil, because I'm not able, because my shoulder is so sore, you know, and it's getting so hard for me because my hand is shivering. Is the shoulder have a lot of pain? Definitely, man, this is only for my work right now. I will go back, but as soon as you know, like once I got recovered, this is only for my source of income. I have to run my house and family.
It's your livelihood.
That's why I'm saying this is my livelihood, you know, at the moment.
And so tell me about what happened. Was it some weeks back? You were saying to Seamus when you were chatting that all too often taxi drivers may not know, and you found out the hard way, that you could well be used as a drug courier service.
That's the thing I'm telling you, you know, like we are just working on the night times. Many people, you know, that definitely they're using the drugs, that couriers, like they use the taxi as a courier. Like, man, even like I was reading article, not me, like a couple of months before as well, you know, I was reading, they just like the guard, I stopped the one of the taxi driver. They just like delivering. What I'm saying, the people ordering taxis, man, this is our job. They're ordering on the application. The application is the biggest problem right now, you know, in the country. Maybe you heard about a lot of taxi shortages and all this shit thing is coming on, you know, like there is no shortage. But need to be understand that in the apps, we just going to the pick up the job. We doesn't know, and this is not even our job to ask, you know, what are you doing and what else. We just have to give the ride, and that's it. Finish your job.
You have to give the ride. That's it. Get paid. Move
that's
on.
It, yeah.
But were you stopped some time back?
No. What I'm saying, that's what I'm saying. You know, the one time the people, like I just picked the passenger on there, and I just going drop them into the in. Kind of a Tohar area, you know, like near to the Tohar area. And after I find that, oh, they're just living the drugs. And I just very traumatized on that. I was scared, really scared, because they just start fighting each other, you know, like.
You were there when you witnessed all of this, having dropped them
because
off.
Because I just dropping them and they're just dealing with the like our drugs. They're just giving money. And I just so scared on that time, honestly, you know, I doesn't know.
And do they get back like, into the taxi again and head off with you again?
No, they just want to come back. He said, no, because I just run away from there. You know, I said, man, I doesn't know, because the people using in the night times, supplying drugs, taking drugs, they use a taxi as a courier.
Okay. And do you know of somebody that was suspended for 6 weeks pending some kind of guard investigation for unknowingly couriering drugs?
Man, I didn't know that thing. Suspendedly. When?
I just see that there was possibly an investigation where somebody driving a taxi didn't know that whomever was in it was actually couriering drugs around.
This is actually, I know one person, he's not in the Cork City, but he's somewhere else, you know. Like,
that's what I mean. Like, was he suspended pending an investigation because he didn't know what was going on?
Yeah, he was telling me one time, you know, like, I know him, like, he's my kind of friend, but he's driving to the different county in Galway.
Yeah,
somewhere.
I know.
He was telling me the same thing. He said, look, one time, just giving the ride, and... The guard, I was chasing them or whatsoever, they pulled me over, stopped me, and they find the culprits and find the drugs with them, you know. And they start investigation with me, like, you know them. I say, look, man, I just take the fare of the application, I just dropping them. I haven't to do anything with them.
I don't know what they're doing or the reasons why they're going from A to B. And when do you think you'll be fit enough to go back to work?
Man, I'm just trying to recover, because I'm going to see my GP today, you know, because of my jawline, I have a lot of pain, and GP call up maybe afternoon, and definitely have to come back, man. But right now I'm not in the position, because my shoulder is not giving me a sport. Is that like we have to drive like 10 hours in a day?
I know, I understand. It's not easy. I know.
Yeah.
We did make a contact with Garda Press to see if they have anything with regards to the attack and what happened to you on Friday night. And they say that there's nothing on the Pulse system, which is the system that stores everything. So at this point in time, there's no record of it as such.
What kind of record?
Well, in the sense that it hasn't been registered on the Pulse system as an active investigation, what happened to you last Friday night. That's a bit bizarre, isn't it?
That's the thing, Neil. I even doesn't know. That's why I'm saying I just try to get an update from the Garda station
okay.
1 to 2 times. They never okay. update me yet. Is I registered or not?
Well, what you described was horrific, what we went through. Unfortunately, not for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and I'm going to stay in touch with you and see how your recovery is going, Kadir.
Yeah.
And I want to chat some more with Bobby Lynch after 10
yeah.
o'clock. My apologies to Bobby for keeping him waiting. But look after yourself in the short term anyway, and we'll chat again, all right?
Thank you very much, Neil. Thank you very much.
Okay, Kadir, take care.
That's not all.
Right. I mean, awfully sad what happened to you. Very, 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 very bad. And I can understand that you would be, among other things, very angry. Anybody would be for this to happen to them at any time of the day or night, but particularly horrid when it's a taxi driver and it's three against one in a situation like that. Back after 10, text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
And
conversation that matters.
While it's not Monday, because it is Tuesday, but we weren't here Monday, so what we would have done on Monday, we do today Tuesday, so I'm still going to call it the Monday Munchies. Yes, indeed, your opportunity to have all sorts of goodies delivered by Red Patroller this lunchtime, courtesy of ourselves and Luso of Ballincollig. Everyone who loves chocolate and cakes will love to win this prize on any given week. And you can see exactly what they do with Luso's. Cara Barry and Ian Kerrigan, they're out in Ballincollig, and their delicious creations are all online, lusocork.ie, LUSSO cork.ie. So what have I got for you, those who are working alongside you this morning? Well, we got honeycomb chunks, we got minty brittle, we got mallow clusters, and with a countdown to Easter, and if you have a particular love of Belgian chocolate, we have half Easter eggs filled with luscious salted caramel, chocolate ganache, dipped brownie pieces, an assortment of Easter bunnies, hand-created Easter eggs with the Belgian milk chocolate and the white chocolate and the dark chocolate. So it really is a hamper full of gorgeousness, a fabulous box of goodies. So I need you to tell me where you are, who you are and where you are. So text 086 8104 106, who you are and where you're working, and we'll do the shout-outs and start it in about a half an hour's time. And then Red Patrollers will deliver all of these goodies to the workplace of the winner at lunchtime today, courtesy of ourselves and Luso Ballincollig. So text who you are and where you are to 086 8104 106. We'll start the shout-outs in a half an hour's time. Calls on the way.
Call Neil now. 0818 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Text 086 8104 106. Listening to that taxi driver, what are people coming to? That man is trying to make a living. They want to comp on and have respect for our taxi and bus drivers. I hope the driver realizes that these are only a small amount of bad, disrespectful people. It's awful. Very sad, says Marie in Clon. So, scumbags attack a taxi driver, and the major criticism is the Gardaí. Oh, I got that. The unit that was on Friday is now on rest days. That's why the guards won't have been in contact just yet. Thank you for that. It's not a criticism, and I'm not for a moment suggesting that it's not an active Garda investigation. I know that it is early days, but there's a lot of evidence that the Gardaí can certainly work on, but as of yet it's not on pulse. So I'd imagine what you're saying to me is that as soon as the shift is back again, that it will then be entered into pulse and become an active guard investigation. I think it's unfortunate, though, that nobody called his wife, Kadir's wife, because she was very worried when she got up in the morning. But anyway, off the story that the taxi driver has been attacked, the sooner serious legislation for kicking people in the head is upgraded to attempted murder, the better. Isn't it strange that the guards didn't make contact with the man's family? They had his taxi number, surely. Yeah, it was unfortunate. So sorry for that taxi driver. I hope the scumbags are caught. There should be CCTV where they were picked up, says Anne. Well, he recalls the estate and even the house where the first drop was made. So that would be a good place to start. But it's a vicious and it's a completely unprovoked and a cowardly attack on somebody, notwithstanding the fact that on top of everything else, it's three against one. And, you know, it's hard to recover from when you're not expecting it and you're kind of sucker punched, it's very hard to recover from that and even to try and defend yourself properly, because you really are caught unawares. I mean, I could talk about that all morning long, but enough of me. Text 0868 104 106. It comes on the back of two recent ones. We had one taxi driver was attacked and had his car stolen a couple of weeks back. The taxi was stolen. Junaid was on the air, who was mugged down in Glanmire got a bad beating. And I'd imagine, I think in fairness, Bobby Lynch from the Cork Taxi Council says a lot of fellas out there are too embarrassed to even report it, so it could be an awful lot worse than we ever even know. He joins me by phone. Bobby, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. Good morning.
And in the case of Kadir, not taking from the gravity of all the other cases, but this is particularly bad, isn't it?
Neil, just to say that before, we start, like, we don't criticise the girls, not one bit. We know how tough the girls' job is. They have no backup either, the same as us, you know. But just to clear that up.
No, I'm not saying that anybody is in particular. Mind you, there are texts, and it probably is fair to say that if somebody is taken away by ambulance after getting a bad mugging and a bad beating, that if he asks that his wife be contacted, maybe that should have been done.
Oh, yes, she should have been done. Yeah. We will be asking them questions, and no doubt we will be getting the answers to them. But like, just to get back to the attacks on taxi drivers now, we had a very busy weekend, really, and there might be more things that happened out there on the weekend. We don't know. Fellas just won't tell us.
You'd undoubtedly have people getting sick in the back of taxis. That can happen any time. Yeah. You could have people doing leggers. Oh, yeah. That could happen any time. This is quite bad
It's not enough to my ears now when the taxi driver's getting badly beaten. So I have it. What can I say to the taxi drivers out there? Like, there's nothing we can say. Just be careful out there. I listened to the tape that this chap had. Like, I could hear the voices, and he tried everything to tell him, go away, I don't want no money. Like, he did what he was supposed to do, really tried to talk him out of it.
Was this recorded? You know what I mean? Was it recorded?
There's a recording there, but that will have to go to the girls, really.
Who'd make a recording like that? How was the recording made?
But the dash cam could pick up the voices.
Okay. So the whole conversation, you know, I mean, everything that happened, and the attack is captured on audio.
Yeah, you can hear the shouting. You can hear your man getting sick in the back of the car. He was like a horse. The roaring of him getting sick, you know? And,
Why do people get so angry and so vicious that you'd have...
Well, it's drinking stuff like that, you know? Like, at the end of the day, people go and they enjoy themselves, and they go to the pub, they have a lot of drink, they go out and they get something to eat after that. Then the last person to bring them home is the taxi driver, and the taxi driver is the last person they meet. And some people might have having a bad night, and they take it out with the taxi driver. It happens. It actually happens.
But it is reasonable for a taxi driver to say, I'm not continuing with the fare, you'll have to get out with the passenger, call another taxi, this is off the road now because your man just got sick all over the back of the...
You helped me out one time when someone got sick in my car. They destroyed it. And what was the words out of that woman's mouth? It's only a taxi. Do you remember that, Neil?
Yeah, I do.
No.
I do.
And after that, I had another chap. I don't know how he did it, but he put it right down the back of my neck.
It's disgusting. It's disgusting.
And I literally fainted.
I said it before, and I always say it every time I talk to you. You need to get a Perspex division between the front and the back of the taxis.
Well,
and don't allow anybody in the passenger seat while you're at it.
No, see, that's wrong then to the people that likes to sit in the front and have a chat with you and genuine nice people. We have a lot of them, remember? It's only the minority. It is tons and drivers.
Oh, sure, I know. The vast majority of people went home in taxis right across the weekend, well-behaved, paid the fare, maybe even gave it to
you. Did.
I get that.
Like, they did. Like drivers are on to me. Like, says, Bobby, what are we going to do? A lot of fellas want to withdraw their services on a Saturday night, but that's unfair to the people that we carry all the time that are good to us. So it's up to, like, the NTR advertising how such a good job a taxi driver's career is. It's not. It's a very dangerous job.
It can be
dangerous. They're not telling people that.
Yeah, it can be very
dangerous.
They're
not telling people that.
Yeah.
And how can you make this attractive for anyone to come into this industry? None of my families would come into this. And there's no Irish lads. No, only for the Pakistani lads, the African lads, and the Indian lads, we'd have no taxi service. We'd have none. because there's no Irish guys wants to come into this.
Okay, but why is why don't the Irish guys want to drive taxis? Is it because of their? Surely it can't be because they're afraid they're going to get beaten up.
Well, it is the danger of it, and it's all the regulations that the fella have to jump through to become a taxi driver.
Okay, but they're the same regulations that the other drivers have to jump through.
Neil, we are inside in town during the day, and we can look left and right of us, and we can see drug dealing going on inside in town, people drinking on the streets, and then you have a taxi enforcement officer watching us to see have we got our receipt machine working properly, have we got an extinguisher. There's no one watching the drug dealers or the people drinking on the streets. They're watching the taxi driver.
Well, I suppose, you know, it's not their job to be looking at the people drinking on the streets. It's their job to make sure that the taxis do have the things that you said that they have to have.
Yeah, but now, when I go to walk, if I want to walk inside in Perth Street, right, when I come down the street, there's private cars parked in the taxi ranks. If I pull up behind them, I get a fine. That's wrong. That is wrong. And it's just driving taxi drivers mad, like.
Yeah.
Getting back to the attack. Like, I listened to the tape and I met with that chap yesterday. And now, you can imagine his wife and you can imagine your own wife if it happened to you.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people out there are going out at night to drive the public home after having the night out. Now, there is a few that will turn on taxi drivers, won't pay the fare, they're brazen away, they're not paying there. Good luck. Know what I mean? The gangs can only help us so much because they have their hands full. Everyone has been released at the same time.
Here's a response. You know what I mean? Here's a response from somebody who claims to have been in the taxi. I was the person in the taxi. It's not the whole story with regards to what's been claimed on air. There was no sick. What happened was when we got to my home, the taxi driver refused to take our babysitter home, got into an argument with my wife. She said she was refusing to pay him as the bringing the babysitter home was part of the deal. I tried to calm the argument, told him I'd pay and we'd leave it off. But the doors were locked for 10 minutes and he called the guards. I got out of the car after wheeling down the window. When I got around to his side, the door blew open and then it kicked off. My wife videoed everything. The guy who said also joined in, was in no shape to attack anyone, I can tell you, and he was just leaning against a wall. There was no heavy fighting, it was more like grappling. I don't believe he went unconscious, but when the guards arrived, he lay on the floor, then sat up and spoke to them, and they called the ambulance. I'm now reporting this matter to the taxi regulator, and I'm now reporting this to the Gardaí. The Gardaí have the video of the attack. My lip has been split. So that's from someone who claims was in the taxi. It's a bit of he says, she says, I know. But
it's his name, but I tell you something out there, like, he's reporting to the taxi regulator, right? No, you have the regulator bringing the driver in. No, who do we report to? The guards, did the regulator tell us?
The truth is in there somewhere, I know, between both versions. One from Kadir, obviously, and then from somebody who just doesn't want to come on the air, but claims to have been one of those in the taxi.
How would there be
video of it, do you think? Would somebody have filmed it with a phone or something, do you think?
I think there was one person okay. Videoing it with a phone.
Okay.
No, but you have to listen to both sides, Neil,
No, just from the point of view of balance, I'd be obliged to say, this is somebody who claims to have been in the taxi and is telling a different version of events. I'm not saying either.
If the taxi driver asked him to leave the car, he should have leaven.
Yeah.
For a long argument.
Yeah.
And another thing, we don't make deals and contracts when we pick up customers. We don't make them because we don't know what's going to happen on the journey.
Well, it would be easy to prove or refute whether or not somebody got sick in the back of the taxi because it hasn't been cleaned out yet. So either somebody did and that's how it all started, or somebody didn't vomit in the back.
Yeah. No, what was the reason would the taxi driver want to move his car for if they didn't get sick in the car?
That's also true. But that's where we are at the moment. Okay. So and just finally, he also mentioned that unbeknownst to taxi drivers, they're ferrying drug dealers around the city. Is that true?
Look, I'm parked inside in town. You're coming down the street and you're flagged down or someone get into your car. You don't know who's getting into your car. We don't know who's getting into a car until you get in. Next they tell you, go here. Next they say, go here, go there, there. You're going around in circles.
With the same person that's doing different drops, is it?
There's different drops, different pickups, but the taxi driver's caught in the middle then.
Would a taxi driver ever say, when he or she would cotton onto it, no, you have to get out, or is it too risky?
Well, it's too risky then,
yeah. Okay.
So just keep your mouth shut and that's it, you know?
Yeah, okay, all right.
And unfortunately, the taxi driver could fall in for if they're stopped by a patrol car.
Totally, yeah, totally. As could happen, yeah. You also investigate.
Oh, it do happen.
All right, okay. Thanks, Bobby. I'm sure there'll be an update on this. We'll keep an eye on it. Bobby Lynch from the Cork Taxi Council. Text 0868 104 106. Call's on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868
104 106. The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Everybody else, of course, got on with their lives and was out and about and enjoying the long weekend and the St. Patrick's Day parades. Everything went so well and the weather was definitely on our side. It was great to see some great footage from Mallow. I saw others from Cove and down along West and Clonakilty and places like that. The St. Patrick's Day parade in the city was fantastic. Fair play to the Lord Mayor, Kieran McCarthy. He delivered on his promise to dress up as a Willy Wonka character and he got right into the festivities. Big beaming smiles. It was great to see actually everybody getting involved in the crack. And on Friday's programme we had an awful lot of fun. I want to say thank you to Owen Hennessy from Live Music Promotions Ireland. Sorted out some great acts for us on the air on Friday with the Fogues. Ultimately they sold out Cypress Avenue in the end. What a great gig for the Fogues up from Mitchelstown. Sold out Cypress Avenue. Mickey Joe Hart was in studio with the Grand Marshals, the Frank and Walters as well. Mason's Apron were in studio. So thank you, Owen Hennessy. Provides an awful lot of live music for us on a Friday morning on this here show. And you can check out everything he does on Facebook and Instagram for any live music needs you might have in your own setting, whatever it may be. Owen and Elsa will sort you out. Owen Hennessy Live Music Promotions on Facebook and Instagram. So thank you, Owen. You played a blinder on Friday. There was another family then at the weekend who had a dramatic rescue where two surfers came to their aid. They got in trouble down in Garrettstown Beach at the weekend. It was a father, a mother, and their two teenage daughters had to be dramatically rescued. They were caught in a riptide and it was local surfers that came to their aid. Around about 4:30, apparently Gardaí started to get numerous 999 calls from about 4:30 on, reporting swimmers in difficulty on the beach. Riptides, you have no power over them. And they were badly shaken, but brought to safety with the help of two surfers who went to their aid. So whomever those two surfers were, I'd love to share their names and, you know, give them a big shout out on the air because they probably saved lives there at the weekend. But what was happening, whatever happened to Kadir, and we had his story earlier on this morning as a taxi driver on Friday night, badly beaten and badly shaken. Well, that not at the same time, but on the same night, a little bit earlier, a man organized, it would seem, it's alleged, to meet another man in a car park at the Eurospar at Newtown Road in Cove in East Cork. Friday night, this time around 8:00. All of a sudden then, a samurai sword allegedly is produced and the weapon is swung and a man is injured. Now, that man underwent emergency surgery. This is life-threatening injuries and has now been put on a ventilator. I'm joined by Barry Rhodes, Southern correspondent with the Irish Times, to bring us up to date on this story. Barry, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you doing?
Clearly an active guard investigation. Friday night, around about 9:00. What's your understanding of what went on?
Yeah, as you say, Neil, man was attacked at the car park of the Eurospar in Newtown Road in Cove. Initially, I was hearing it was about 8, but Garda Press were saying it's about 5 to 9. It's understood that the injured man, he approached a man in a car in the car park, only for the occupants of the car to get out. Armed with the samurai sword, he swung at him, and I think it appears he missed him the first time, but the second time he hit him and connected with his leg below his knee, and the injured man collapsed. And there were people came to his aid, saw it happening, I think, or it certainly came to his aid soon after. But he suffered a serious injury in terms of an artery being severed, and he was bleeding profusely. Paramedics came within minutes, but in that time he lost a huge amount of blood, we understand. And it took paramedics and an emergency medical consultant. They spent over 40 minutes trying to stabilise him at the scene. before he was rushed by ambulance to CUH, where he underwent emergency surgery. And as you say, he was put in a ventilator, and our understanding is that he remains in a very critical condition in CUH today, whatever it is, 3 days on or 4 days on. Gardaí then
family maintain a vigil by his bedside, don't they?
Oh, indeed, you could well imagine it's a worrying time. It's a worrying time for them over the last few days. But Gardaí launched an investigation, began an investigation. They set up an incident room in Cove, Garda Station, and they appealed. They began harvesting CCD footage, and they've appealed for more. If anybody has any dash cam footage there, they've been trying to identify the lone assailant, as it were. There's a car involved, so they're trying to trace that and identify that. So the investigation is ongoing, and ongoing at a pace, I understand. But obviously, one guard described it to me as absolutely horrific attack. They're keeping an open mind, they say, at this stage on a possible motive for it, but they believe perhaps that the injured man may have arranged to meet the man, so they're checking his phone for any messages or calls he may have received and trying to trace those as well.
Any idea what that meeting might have been about? Ralph Regal is suggesting in the Indo might have been a dispute over money or something?
As far as I'm aware, Gardaí are still very much keeping an open mind. Yeah, okay. They haven't sort of come down and said anything specific like that, but they believe that perhaps the injured man did arrange to meet somebody, and whether he met the person he intended to meet or not is another question, but certainly they're very anxious to speak to anybody who was in the Newtown Road area.
And the family are very, very anxious that he survives this attack on a ventilator, so he is... As it really is.
Oh, that's an indication. It's an indication of how serious this man is. And as I say, my understanding is he lost an awful lot of blood in the attack, and before the paramedics got there, and they got there quickly. But you know, the very fact that they spent 40 minutes, I suppose, at the scene trying to stabilise him with an emergency medical consultant in attendance, also assisting.
Yeah,
that's an indication of how seriously the man's injuries were. And as I say, Garda Press in their statement said he remains in a critical condition at Cork University Hospital. So shocking attack and a very worrying time for a family down in Cove.
What are Gardaí appealing for? Maybe witnesses, or do you, as you say, dash cam that might have maybe caught the...
Anybody who was in the area, witnesses between 8 o'clock and 9:15 may have camera footage, including dash cam footage, and of, I would imagine, in surrounding areas as well, cars approaching, cars leaving the area. So anyone who has any information, they're asking them to contact Cove Garda Station on, I have a number there, 021-49-08530, and as I said, there's an incident room set up in Cove Garda Station to deal specifically with this assault.
Okay. Worrying times for the family of that young man. Meanwhile, a story that we were talking on the air about last week, and commonly known as the Tregumna 10, quite an amount of work over the weekend by Gardaí, harvesting CCTV footage, you know, trying to they've also got you know, electronic devices seized by at least some of those allegedly involved. They've also got a Land Rover, over the camper van, the articulated lorry that was seized in West Cork. What's the update with regards to these individuals?
Yeah, as you say, a lot of work by Gardaí in this, but they're under, they're against the clock in this because they have only 7 days, and that 7 days expires on Thursday morning. 7 days on from when they arrested these 10 fellows in Tregumna and Lep Village. So we've had two applications in court by Gardaí. They're in under Section 50 of the Criminal Justice Act, which allows for 7 days, but after the first 48, Gardaí have to go to a court and apply. A chief superintendent has to apply for an extension for 72 hours, and we had that on Friday night when Chief Superintendent Vincent O'Sullivan went in to a special sitting of Bandon District Court, and he applied to Judge James McNulty on Friday night, and he said in that case and on that hearing that Gardaí were liaising with a number of police forces in other countries, including Dubai, the Netherlands, Spain and Serbia, as well as the PSNI. And he said at that stage Gardaí had obtained or seized a total of 43 separate electronic devices, including mobile phones, laptops and a satellite phone, which Gardaí believe were integral to the activities of this organised crime group, as they sought to import large quantity of drugs into the state for transfer on elsewhere. He also said that at that stage he had 120 hours of CCTV, and Gardaí had harvested that from various locations in West Cork and other places. They were continuing to harvest it, but they needed time to examine that. So that was basically the extent of his application. Then he said that the group believed they had considerable financial resources, which they used to book flights into Ireland, accommodation in Ireland, and hire vehicles as part of their plan. That was Friday night's application, and Judge McNulty on that occasion granted the 72-hour extension for all 10 men. And then last night they had to go back again for another 48-hour extension application, and we heard at that stage that as part of the investigation, and since Friday, Gardaí have carried out searches in two residential premises in Dublin, and they've also asked or they asked the PSNI to search commercial premises in Northern Ireland. He said that, first of all, I should say as well, actually, Gardaí made an application last night that the matter wouldn't be reported, that they wanted a prohibition on any publication of any details. Judge McNulty said he was slow to do that, that he believed the media had a right to cover such events, but he did decide to read out the sort of sensitive paragraphs from this written application regarding forthcoming operational matters. So he read those himself.
Okay.
They weren't read out loud, and then he got Chief Superintendent O'Sullivan to confirm their accuracy. So what we did hear though last night after that was that they have now seized another 31 electronic devices, including phones, SIM cards, and they're waiting to get it, or in some cases they have extracted
these
information,
vital,
others,
yeah,
they haven't.
Yeah, yeah.
These are vital, particularly when you don't have product.
That's my question. There's no sign of any drugs.
So they're really reliant on the planning and the coordination and correspondence and communications between people. So he said that the phones could be divided into two groups, basically those that they can attribute to individual suspects, and there are some who they can't link to anyone.
I know. Yeah.
There are those then within there are two groups, as I say. One where they've got PIN numbers from some of the people and they've been able to access them. There are those then where people, they can link them to people, but people aren't giving them PIN numbers. Then there are ones that they can't link to people. So he said there's a lot to be done there. They've got two, what he called, if I heard him correctly, Iridium satellite phones. And they've had to contact experts in the States to try and obtain assistance in extracting information from that, and that's delayed their ability to put the information to the suspects.
Okay.
And then they now have 450 hours of CCTV.
They have 450 hours of CCTV. They have the Zephyr camper van. They have the Land Rover Discovery. They have the articulated lorry seized. They don't have any product, as you say. And they have like all of these different suspects at different Garda stations, I believe. Is that right?
Yeah, there is five. There are two in Bantry, two in Bandon, two in Toker, two in the Bridewell, and two in Mallow.
Okay.
So there's teams of, my understanding, of teams of about four Gardaí interviewing each suspect. So that's 40 guards involved. And it's a seriously intensive Gardaí investigation. But the problem for them is obviously the clock. They only have 48 hours from this morning now to continue with it. So the pressure's on because, as I said, they have to go through these 450 hours of CCTV, go through the phones, extract information, and put that to them. They're also liaising with police forces. Yes, I know we've heard of previously, but also know last night we heard that they're liaising with police in France, the Netherlands, Bulgaria, and there was somewhere else as well that was new to the party, as it were.
I did read it at the weekend, and they're talking about maybe this just final point with regards to media saturation that went so far as to mention Hezbollah as part of this investigation. Is that? They talk about billions of euro of drugs linked to Hezbollah.
Yeah, that was actually mentioned last night by Plunkett Taff. He's a solicitor in Bandon. He's representing this 47-year-old Iranian-born Dutch citizen. When the Gardaí made their application for a prohibition on any publicity, Plunkett Taff stood up and said he was supporting it. And he said what there was he said there had been saturation media coverage of the case to date, and he expressed concern that some of the reportage was highly prejudicial to his client. He said, this case has attracted saturation media coverage with reference to billions of euros of drugs and links to Hezbollah in respect of these people who are not charged with any offence, none of which was stated at the hearing on Friday night, but which could contaminate a jury pool. Now, Chief Superintendent Vincent O'Sullivan confirmed that he made no reference to any amount of drugs or any links to any
Middle Eastern terror groups
at the Friday night hearing. And then Judge McNulty said, as an avid newsreader himself, he had read the reports. He didn't believe it was saturation coverage, and he said he didn't believe the coverage was prejudicial. He pointed out that the case was a long way from a jury at this stage, which the case went to trial and concerns still existed then he'd no doubt, but the trial judge, whoever that would be, would issue an appropriate warning to any jurors. So he granted the application, and the 10 men are now held for another 48 hours, and as you say, they're in various Garda stations, and in some cases, because they don't speak English, there are six Spaniards, two Dutch citizens of Iranian extraction, one Serbian, and a guy from Northern Ireland, in some cases, particularly Spanish, and I think the Spanish and the Serbian chap, there are interpreters assisting Gardaí, so that's obviously slowing things down as well.
Okay, so there'll be free legal aid, interpreters and everything that will go with it. Yeah.
Free legal aid, yeah. Okay. So it's a major investigation, but as I said, the clock is ticking. That's the Garda concern, that they have a lot to do.
48 hours done before, left on that clock. Before, since when? This morning? Is it 48 hours from this morning?
Yeah, they've started... The time, this for first 48 hours would have expired on Saturday morning, but they went to court on Friday night to get it extended in advance, so there'd be no issue about people, you know, anything they get being not legally obtained. So again, they took the precaution of going last night early, as it were, to get it. So it kicks in from, I presume, about 7:30 this morning.
Okay.
Now, there have been one or two guys had to be hospitalised, so there's that suspended for them. One guy had to go and get stitches removed, and another fellow was taken to hospital.
And is it is it pointless investigating at sea then, trying to find product? Is that pointless?
No, that's still ongoing as well. That's still ongoing as I understand it.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are a lot of prongs to this. And obviously, there are all the foreign inquiries with the French. Scottish police. My apologies. That's the other one I'd forgotten. Scottish police are also being roped into
this. There is a lot going on.
Okay. Northern Ireland, PSNI, searches in Dublin, Netherlands, Bulgaria, Spain, Dubai.
Amazing.
And I think that covers most of what
That's where we're at. Yeah, Fair play. We'll stay in touch. Thanks as always, Barry. Barry Rhodes, Southern Correspondent with the Irish Times. Text 0868 104 106. We got shout outs on the way.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Involved in the conversation, the Neil Prendeville Show with Mercedes-Benz Cork. There's a story that I've been watching for the past number of weeks since it became public knowledge in the newspapers, and this is the story of Sean, who has on his own land a building that he's built there. It's his own mobile home that he's adapted and done a lovely job in it, and he lives in it, and he's been before the courts because of it, and the council says that he needs to knock it down. I think there was one stage he was told in court that the date that it had come down by was the 14th of March, and if it wasn't down, there could well be a jail sentence. Now, I remember sharing that story on air on a couple of occasions, and I know that people who are listening and texting were very angry about it, particularly with regards to the state of play when it comes to housing or trying to find places for people to live. But enough of me. I want to hear Sean's story from himself. Sean, good morning.
Neil, good morning. How are you doing?
How far back does this go? And tell us about it. What did you build and put on the land?
Well, it started off over 5 years ago. My marriage broke down, so we had to sell the family home amicably on my estate. So I had nowhere else to go. So I bought this site here, which is not far from where I live in the area where I'm known and born and reared. So I had the site bought. I moved the mobile home onto the site. So I left the family home. I moved across here. Lived away here for 28 weeks, had no services, no water, no electricity, no nothing. So I said, okay, it's another chapter. I said, right, I'll get on with it. So summertime, lovely weather, great sunshine, and a bit of a shock to my system. But I said, okay, here we go. Then I got ill. I got bronchitis and stuff and was pretty ill with that. So went to my local GP, Dr. Ryan. Shawnee said, you can't continue living like this. Like the toilet in the bowl frozen, my clothes black. He said, you'd have to do something here. So I said, okay. So I rallied around friends of mine. I was in the building trade, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, qualified tradespeople. I'd seen one of these done. So we converted it into a log cabin, fitted new windows, wildfire central heating. Great job. Wonderful,
I said. Insulated and clad it and everything to keep the heat in and the cold out.
We did. We used a four-inch king span. Like, this is what we would have done in the day, and all my friends were qualified tradespeople. Yeah. So we made it as a separate structure. Basically, what it's like is it's like a garage in all intents and purposes, and you back the mobile home into it.
So all your pals came together. And how long did it take them to do the upgrade?
Not very long, to be quite honest about it. I roped them in here every weekend, supplied them with a few cans of beer to keep them happy, and they worked away Saturdays, Sundays, and stuff like that. So we got it up and running.
Looks fabulous. I've seen the photographs in the tabloids. It looks absolutely super. Just tell me, with regards to exactly where, is this in the Clonmel area of County Tip, is it?
It's actually outside Clonmel. It's in a small rural village called New Wynn.
Okay.
That's where I come from.
And when did it then come to the attention of the authorities or whomever? Like, who got in touch with you then?
Well, what happened was when I had that completed, it looked okay, and I thought it being a mobile structure because it's within the log cabin. I applied to Tipperary County Council for retention for 5 years, just to give me some breathing space, Neil, so I could see which way my life was going to pan out. But Tipperary County Council came back and said no. No, they would not allow 5 years retention on this structure. So that knocked me back a bit. So I said, okay, I'd leave it sit for a while. Then, lo and behold, I got very ill and went to my GP again. I had to go for MRI scans, and I ended up, I had problems with my prostate, a growth requiring surgery and biopsies, and that kind of knocked everything out the window. So I said, look, okay. So I waited for the results to come back. Great. Benign, everything okay. If it had been the other way around, my worries wouldn't have been too much then.
I know.
But then, look, this is where I was now. So I said, okay, I'll go again. Now that my health is okay and I can see myself okay down the line, I'll apply again. So I reapplied again to Tipperary Council now for full planning, the architect and up all the drones, engineers, everything, percolation tests, everything done. Sent it back to Tipperary County Council, month passed or more, same old story back again. No, they said it didn't look right aesthetically. They said I didn't show social and economic need to live in the area, and it would devalue the other properties in the area. That was their way of going about it.
They said what?
They said aesthetically it didn't look right. They said I would devalue the properties in the area, and I didn't show a social and economic need to live here. But I said,
social economic, but you're entitled to somewhere to live, but it's your own land and your own mobile home that you adapted beautifully into a log cabin on your own property. You didn't have planning for it. I know that. I get all of that. But have you subsequently been told that you have now to knock it?
Yeah, the cutoff date was the 14th of this month. The judge's ruling was at Cashel District Court on the 14th of December. That was my fourth appearance there. He said that if I hadn't the structure taken down by the 14th of this month, that he would sentence me to 4 months in Limerick Jail.
Okay, that date has passed, though.
That's past, and I'm sitting here having a cup of tea in my mobile home having a chat with you. So obviously, if I take it down, I have nowhere to go.
Yeah.
If I don't take it down, I'll go to Limerick Jail. And when I'm gone to Limerick Jail, they can take it down. And the clincher here is I've got to pay them to take it down. I paid to put it up with all the help of my friends. I got all the services on. But this is the way they have it ruled to me.
Okay, I'm just trying to find some quotes from recent articles in the newspapers. I just managed to find one here. It says, I'm going to take a stand on this. If they're going to send me to jail at 65 years of age, then I'm prepared to do that.
Absolutely. I was a bit flummoxed with it. We had a meeting in a small rural village here where I live, and we had 250 people in a small rural village. They were actually outside the doors in support of me. Then last Friday, we had a march through the main street in Clonmel from the West Gate to the council office, turnout of about 400 people.
Right.
From Wicklow, Carlow, Cork, everybody that's finding themselves, their own sons, their own daughters, in the exact same situation with the housing crisis that there is. They say, Sean, why can they not leave you alone? They can build modular homes all over the country. Okay, there's no issue with planning. Well, why now do they pinpoint you to make an example of you and everybody else in the same situation?
I suppose they would be saying that if they gave you the green light, it would allow anybody to put up structures anywhere of any fashion they wish, without any planning permission, not going through all of the proper legal requirements to do so, and it would result in a free-for-all.
I agree. I agree 100%. I agree with that. There would have to be restrictions to a certain degree on these. As I said in another interview, they can't be nailed together with pallets or something. This is put together very well, in my humble opinion. I've tried for the planet, but the situation I was in at that time, circumstances decide the way you have to go. I decided I had to go, okay, I meant about it probably arseways, but at the time I didn't have a lot of choice. But I say with the housing crisis, if they could have some kind of criteria with this, to say that they're built to a reasonably good standard.
Yeah, on your own land.
on your own land, it would give people an opportunity to get sorted without adding to the homeless figures.
Or applying to Tipperary County Council for a home from the housing stock either.
Yeah, because I think, like, I'll be dead before I ever get somewhere. At the rate
that's going, 8, 9, 10 years. Have you said to them, all right, I'll comply, I'll take the cabin down, but where are you going to allow me to live then? Are they saying you should live in a car, or have you a van or a Jeep or something?
I have a van, but they say they have no accommodation for a person like me, so they don't have any accommodation. So therefore, they're prepared to make me homeless. I never asked them for anything or anybody. I've done this myself. So therefore, now they say, okay, we'll make you homeless, Sean. We'll take down your home and you sleep in your van. Like, this is ludicrous. This is madness.
And if you're fighting this in court, that doesn't come cheap. Have you got legal fees and everything? Are you running up bills?
Yeah, I had a few quid saved, to be quite honest about it, for when my time comes. It's an old Irish tradition. But now I've gone into that to actually keep my home. So I've ran this out like that. I've paid for everything down along the line.
Yeah, I read that you've already racked up whatever savings you had to look after yourself as the years head on. Over seven grand already, which...
Yes.
Which was money you'd put aside for, you know, the future.
Yes, that's what I'd done when my time had come or whatever like that. I had a few quid squirreled away. So I said I wouldn't be a burden to my family or anything when my time would come. Not I wouldn't put that on them. I have four children. They're trying to live their own lives. So I had that. So I said, okay, if this be the case, I'll have to take a stand and do something.
Okay.
Like the people at the meeting, like there was one girl there and it was her partner and four children. They couldn't afford the rent on the properties now. So therefore, they couldn't afford to get on. The council had no place for them. So their parents put them a mobile home at the back of the house.
Yeah.
Same situation, cold, miserable. So they logged it out. They applied to whatever county that was four times for planning. They kept moving the goalposts. Now this person, two, four children and a partner, they are now hit with the very same thing as me, with an enforcement notice against them. So why can they put a couple in forge? Where are they going to put these? On the street?
Thing. Well, that's the thing. I mean, the real world is completely different to the laws of planning or bureaucracy. You and that family literally have nowhere to go. You took it upon yourself to solve your own issue, and then we're told, no, you can't do that. If you don't take it down, they may send you to jail, and then when you're in jail, knock it down.
Well, that is my point. If I'm in jail, I have a friend of mine to look after. I have two dogs and my cat here. So therefore, I have somebody to look after them. But if I go the scenario and then I arrive back from jail, the site has to be cleared completely. Nothing left here, even down to the top side of grass seed. Post and rail fence, and you've seen it, my gates.
Yeah.
It has to be back to a derelict site, which it was. When I bought the site, people were coming from areas and they were dumping black bags and fridges and washing machines in here. So I took it on myself and I said, okay, it's tough going, but I'll do it.
Yeah, okay,
and I did it myself.
Yeah. Are you amazed at the huge amount of public support and anger from the public with regards to your plight?
I am, because at the meeting, people from Wicklow, Carlow, Cork down your area, they say their daughters, like, I have four children, like, they would probably never own a house in this country. They're paying exorbitant rent. The landlords, they probably live in Spain. Yeah. So they're never going to get an opportunity. So therefore, if, like your children, if you had a good piece of ground and under restriction, you could build one of these. Oh, okay. Now it gives them a chance.
Okay. I just want to give people an opportunity to text on this and maybe finish the conversation with you after 11. It's a pleasure talking to you. I was looking forward to our chat. I hope you can wait for another few minutes just after 11.
Yeah.
All right, Sean. No problem. We'll finish it then. Appreciate it. Thank you. Go and have a cup of tea. Text 0868104106, guys. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. Do get involved in this conversation. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. The plight of Sean Meehan. Your thoughts, please. Text 0868104106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
conversation that matters.
It's the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday today, courtesy of ourselves and Luso in Ballincollig. Everyone who loves chocolate and cake, well, today, another opportunity for the Red Patrollers to deliver to you just so many beautiful treats. A big hamper full of goodies for you and everybody who's working with you. A fabulous box of goodies. Belgian chocolate lovers, pay attention. Honeycomb chunks, minty brittle, mallow clusters, half Easter eggs filled with salted caramel and chocolate ganache, dipped brownie pieces, the list goes on and on. You get an assortment of Easter bunnies, hand-created Easter eggs. Oh, it's just so gorgeous. And they're making just fabulous creations at Luso in Ballincollig. Well done to Carol and Ian. Check them out, lusocork.ie. So some shout-outs for you on this Tuesday morning. Karen and all our colleagues at the Southern Pharmacy Pharmacy Department would love to share the treats and boost the week. Everybody, including the hard-working staff of the stroke unit of the CUH. Morning to Val. AP Vaughan Skipire listening for the Munchies. They're working hard and would love a treat. So would everybody at HSE Unit 5 at the South Ring Business Park. Morning, Roisin and Sive. And the hard workers at Rockwell Engineering on the Janssen site in Ringaskiddy, especially Owen, for all of the staff at Nurture Childcare in Blackrock who are listening. Southern Pallets in Rushbrook are on board. New business opened in Cove. Well done, guys. Morning, Dave. Rose Kennedy would love to win the Munchies for the pet stop at the Kinsale Road roundabout. Roger and all the lads. Some more ML scaffolding are up in the Glen today with Mernan and O'Shea on a housing estate. Also, treats, please, for the Maxi Zoo head office in Ballincollig. They would love the Luso prize. For everybody working at the Cope Foundation, including Denise and all of the staff, Monday Munchies, please, for, I know it's a Tuesday, Agnes and everybody at Smurfit Kappa in the Pollarduff Industrial Estate, and one or two more here. Euro Car Parts in Duclain are listening on the Sarsfield Road, and the operations and transport staff and National Seaways at the Port of Tivoli, always listening, and they'd share with their neighbours at Leaside Shipping as well. So your opportunity to win today's weekly prize, the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday, courtesy of ourselves and Luso. So text who you are and where you are to 0868 104 106. We'll do another bunch of shout-outs in about 20 minutes' time. Now, bizarrely, before I go back to Sean, I'm going to read out some texts from you guys as well on the predicament he finds himself in. Could I just mention, for some, I was just talking about doing a lot of decluttering at home lately, a lot of recycling going on, getting rid of clothing that, you know, if you're looking at week in, week out, and you're not wearing it, it's probably time to shift it on. But in the middle of it all then, I ended up going through lots of old newspapers, you know, stuff that I've been keeping over the years. And I, for some, and some of it I will continue to keep, but lots of it then can just go. But I did come across, you'll find this interesting considering the conversation I'm having with Sean at the moment and his log cabin up in Tipperary. A copy of the Evening Echo. Don't ask me why, I have no idea why. From Thursday, the 7th of August, 2003. The front page news back in 2003 was a kick in the teeth for house buyers. That's right. The irony of it in 2003. The cost of building a house in Cork could rise by 10 grand because of increased development and higher insurance costs. So even 20 years ago, we were talking about the predicament of buying a house. But there was no such predicament with regards to renting. Because in the classifieds in August of 2003, there were 12 columns, each of which had 25 ads per column, which is a total of 300 different ads. For what, you might ask? Well, for flats, for apartments, for house shares, and for properties to let. 12 columns of 25 ads on each column, 300 in total. I'll come back to it a little later on, give you an idea of the locations. Suffice to say, right across the city, all of the suburbs, out as far as your Mallows and your Glanmires and your Carrigalines and places like that. Many of them have prices. It's interesting to see the amount of them back in the day that were saying no rent allowance need apply. That's clearly illegal now, but they're all there, ad after ad after ad. So many properties 21 years ago. You wouldn't see that now. I'll give you examples of them a little later on this morning, but back to calls, texts and comments after the break.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Sean Meehan and his log cabin up in County Tipperary may take some comfort from texts this morning. Richie says, even though the state cannot provide, the state would rather have you rely upon the state and die rather than live by the sweat of your own brow, says Richie and Toker. Some nonsense going on in Tip with Sean, isn't there? That is a caravan with a shed built around it. For God's sake, that's the perfect place for something like that, says Morris. Leave the man alone. My father is living between Cork and Mallow, where he has lived for 40 years. Next to him him, there is a site that has changed hands five times as it's not big enough to build on. It was bought again before Christmas, where it was purchased by members of the travelling community. They had no planning and started building an 8-foot wall around the site with massive gates. The council have been out and told them they can't build there as the site is too small, but nothing can be done to stop it. What a joke of a country. The council and courts are living in another world. They're willing to make an Irish citizen homeless, but they're more worried about foreigners coming into the country. Tell him to identify as an Irish traveller. He might then be left alone. There are travellers in Fermoy who just took over a public picnic area a few years ago and are still there because the council were told they had nowhere else to go. At least that man owns his own land. It's things like this that are pushing people more and more to the right, says Jur in Fermoy. I'm angry listening to that man who's been ordered to take down his log cabin. I can almost guarantee you if this man was a man of colour or maybe a Muslim or a refugee from Ukraine or elsewhere, where this would be allowed to stay up. How dare our minister run around the world and dictate to others how they should operate? Be more in their line to look after Irish citizens. Neil, you asked the man if he has to pay legal fees, and he does, I heard him say. How is it that 10 non-Irish men arrested on drug smuggling suspicion can get free legal aid in this country? It's a backward country we live in. This man is looking to do stuff for himself, but yet he's not allowed to. Crazy Ireland. Well done, lads, running all over the globe trying to impress the likes of the Americans and the Australians, to mention just a few, and you can't look after an Irish citizen. Morning, I live near Mallow, and they built a few log cabins in a car park there for Ukrainians. What's the difference between them and that man, Sean? He needs somewhere to live. He did it on his own land. I'll tell you what they want. They want Irish people to just go away and die quietly. I'm livid over what's happening to that poor man. And just another few. The whole thing is ludicrous and people are furious about it. It's an absolute disgrace. They can house Ukrainians and other foreign nationals, but they wouldn't look after their own. Good luck to Sean. I hope with all of the protesting that he wins out. Neil, says Marie, we must all back Sean up. It's disgusting what's happened to him. He's trying so hard. Why wouldn't he get free legal aid? I'm so sad for Sean. We must all stand with him. Wow, more. What a disgrace about the man in Tip. They have no problem building modular homes for Ukrainians with no planning permission, but they send an Irish man to jail to try and put a roof over his own head. I'm so angry with the way Irish people are being treated in this country, says Mary Jane. And just three quick ones. I really feel that there is a case to be brought against the government for discrimination of Irish citizens when it comes to housing in particular. If he was a migrant, it would be different. He'd have every politician fighting for him. Man of advanced years has no home. The government is to blame. Man solves problem, provides his own home. The government takes away home, jails the man. And one final one. If Sean is sent to jail, the whole country should be up in arms. Something is radically wrong here. What a pathetic country we live in. Give me patience with Ireland, says Eilish in Waterford. Sean, do you take some comfort from all of those texts?
Absolutely. I said it all the way along. When this first started, I couldn't believe the feedback from everybody coming back to me to say it's a very sorry affair. And I agree with what your listeners have just come back with. Like, I didn't do anything to anybody. I tried to make a home for myself out of a bad situation. And I've been crucified for it, dragging me through the courts. I'm in there four times. Nobody knows me. Nobody knows what I'm in there for. It's tough going being in somewhere like that at my age.
Do you feel, but though, then, that you're taking a stand, not just for yourself, but I'm getting the feeling that you're taking a stand for others as well in similar predicaments?
I am.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. From the feedback, one lady I spoke to at that rural meeting there in the village in the UN became upset. Her daughter was in a volatile relationship or whatever. So they bought a mobile home for her. They put it in at the back of their own house. It couldn't be seen by anybody. So now she's there with her two children. They can keep an eye on her and make sure she's okay. 1 month passed. Somebody, for whatever reason, best known to them, reported it to the council. Now the council are banging on the door saying they were taking enforcement notice against her. Like, what has it become?
In Clonmel,
it's crazy.
In Clonmel, are there 200 modular units built in Clonmel?
They're not actually built at the moment, but they're in the process of being built.
Okay, so what? Tell me what. Like, they're putting up the modular units. I think you were saying they have landscape gardens, a tarmac drive, and everything. They're fairly decent, are they?
I tell you, I would live in it. I went to Thurles to look at the ones in Thurles. Landscape gardens, tarmac drives, 24-hour security. Like, I don't know. The system is broken. Like, they can do everything, as I say, for everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, okay, if that be the case, but why bring so many people, like in Dublin? They took all those things away because of Paddy's Day. They looked unsightly. It was a PR stunt. Mm. Now they're all heading back there again. They stuck them all out in the middle of a field in nowhere. But why bring these people in if they've nowhere to put them? We can't look after our own.
Do you think there's added discrimination because of your age, I'm wondering, where they say they have nothing suitable for you as a single man of 65 years of age? Is it that you're not as important as maybe people who might be younger or with children, perhaps, is it?
Yeah, I think I fall between the cracks. But look, that's okay. But there's a case going on at Clonmel at the minute. It's on the Echo, I think it's a local paper that comes up here. The family partner, his woman, and two children had a four-bedroom. The council approached them to say that they would sort them out with a two-bedroom. It was his mum's original council four. He was on the rent book. So he thought, okay, he would sign up to a two-bedroom. So his time scale elapsed 3 months. So he approached the council and they said they didn't have a two-bedroom now. So he had signed up to this. So, okay, 7:30 last week or the week before, bang, bang on the door. Sheriffs, bailiffs, on Garda.
What?
To put them out.
What? What?
Like, no, they wanted to make them homeless.
All they had requested was to release a four-bed for people who might need it so that they could downsize to a two-bed. This is not of their making.
No, they thought they were doing the right thing. Now they would say that, okay, with the two children had grown a bit, they say, okay, they will go to the two-bedroom. They signed off on this. So they signed off on it. Now they go, and then the council say, well, you signed off on it now, but unfortunately, we don't have a two-bedroom. So therefore, we have somebody that wants the four-bedroom, but I'm sorry, you'll have to pack up your bags and you go under the West Gate and meet up with the other people down there, and you can live down there.
But they won't move out, surely, will they? That makes no sense.
No, I think the only thing, and in fairness, I think it was down to the local Garda Síochána, said the lady done an interview on the radio station up here with Frank Curry, Tip FM, and got very upset about it, and said, like, they came at that hour of the morning, like, it's like the bad old days, the evictions, to throw this woman out to put another family in. Now they broke what they were supposed
they
to do to this lady.
Agreement, yeah. And are you expecting a call early in the morning?
This is my thing. I'm afraid to leave the house here. I go to the village and get a few messages. Well, I scooch back home again pretty quickly because 14th was my time scale.
Yeah.
So therefore, they say they can arrive on at any stage, arrest me, take me away, and they can proceed to knock this down, take all my personal possessions, throw them out in the road or throw them out in the field. I don't know.
Hardly would, though, considering the amount of public attention this has garnered, surely.
Well, I maybe now, in fairness, because maybe back a while ago when I was going in and out walking into the court, nobody even knew what my situation was. But a friend of mine, Councillor Niall Denny, he said, Sean, if you don't do something here, he said, you're going to jail. People will say, anybody seen Sean Meehan? And they say, no.
Yeah, so you made your plight public. Matty McGrath is your Tipperary TD, isn't he?
In fairness to Matty, yes, and his daughter. No, he's independent. He's not torn the party line here. He said this is wrong what they're doing. They're doing this all over the country. So as you said earlier, okay, I'm not looking forward to the prospect of spending my 66th birthday in Limerick jail. But if I can take a stand here and do some good, people will say, okay, Sean, you took a stand on this, not alone for Sean Meehan, but every Sean Meehan out there. I took a stand on this. Now, the system is broken. They can do it for everybody else, but they can't do it for their own people, which is wrong.
I mean, I understand the plight you're in, and I'm very much in admiration on the stand you've taken, but I can't help but think that if they turn and look away and allow you to stay there, before you know it, you'll have all sorts of fashion and structure going up in people's land all over the country. You know what I mean?
I agree completely. And I've said this from
day one. Maybe that's what's needed. I don't know. I don't have the answer, but they're probably saying...
I don't either. I wish I did. If I did, I could solve this problem very quickly. But I agree. They can't just be thrown up all over the place willy-nilly. They are setting a precedent here with me. So therefore, if I go to jail on this, that would definitely, everybody else will hide out, whoever's living in these, afraid of the life of the knock on the door.
But
if they had some, if they could regularize this, Leo Varadkar said, nobody has a veto on who lives next door to you in small rural towns and villages. But they're using that same veto against me in a rural village that probably they couldn't even find in there. They don't know me.
Yeah, you must be very worried and anxious at the same time, though, that anything could potentially happen.
I'm absolutely, like, I'm at my wit's end here. If I disappear, as I say, to the shop, I write back and there's a whole load of officials here, machinery like they done in Clonmel at 7 in the morning.
Have the public rallied to you and say that they will put a rally or...
Absolutely.
Or block the diggers or whatever.
Yes, the Irish are a tough, when they get together, they're a force to be reckoned with. We've proved that in history. So now this, I've started the spark for this. And I say, like, we educate here is a great standard of education. Dentists, doctors, vets and stuff. But then when they're all qualified and stuff, they don't have any, can't get accommodation in Dublin. So therefore, it's tough on them and it's tough on their families. They say, okay, now we've got to leave.
But like, have the local community taken a stand and said that they won't allow anybody onto the site to demolish the cabin?
Yeah, they will take a stand here, and if I go to Limerick Jail, they'll camp out here, and nobody say will come in. What they're doing, Sean, they're making an example of you, and it's wrong. Okay. It's morally, it's unfair and unjust. They say the Constitution of Ireland says that it's your basic right as a human being in this state to have a roof over your head, something to eat, something to drink, fresh air.
I know exactly what you're saying, because you have asked for help, you've asked for intervention on your behalf, because clearly, you know, you'd want a serious amount of money in your bank account to be able to pay the rent or even buy your own house. So when you asked for help, it wasn't forthcoming. So they would prefer you to be homeless or in a tent and under another statistic.
So you decided,
I'm going to sort myself out and put up my own place to live, and it'll be very nice and cozy and I'll be happy. And when you did that, of course, that's when the whole power of the state came down on top of your head.
The deck of cards collapsed on top of me. So, look, I am just the underdog, as I said, taking on these people, which is not easy. But the support I have now is unreal. So hopefully down the line, they will do a moratorium on these with restrictions and say that a family sibling coming along can live here and save that money. 1,800 is a lot of money every month. Then they would save enough money that they can have their own privacy, their own independence and get out there. But no, they never. My daughter said, Sean, you can come. Karina said, you can come and live with me. Jesus, Karina, I said, like, you have your partner, you have three children. Like, I'm not going to put myself into that situation.
Okay.
She's trying to make her own life. So I put her out there and she's doing her best. So I'm not going to be on board.
No, I understand that. Okay, so just finally for now, and I hope we have an opportunity to talk again in the future. You're back in Cashel District Court on the 4th of April.
Yes.
Right. And if it's not down by the 4th of April, have you been told pack a bag and bring it to court with you?
Actually, that's what he told me, to bring a bag. I'm heading for Limerick Jail. And if I don't turn up in court on the 4th of April, his ruling was that he will issue a bench warrant for my arrest.
So the only way that you would avoid that is to have the cabin knocked before the 4th of April.
Yeah, I'm between a rock and a hard place.
You're not going to demolish it, though.
No, absolutely. I'm taking a stand on it. They're going to have to come here, arrest me and knock it down themselves. If that way they want to do this.
So will you go to Cashel District Court on the 4th of April with a bag packed?
Absolutely. I will walk in there with my head high. I didn't do anything to anybody. Okay. I didn't break into some old couple and take their life savings or do anything.
Yeah.
All I've done as a citizen of this state, try to provide for myself, which they won't do, to put a roof over my head. And I'm being hammered for this and threatened with putting me in jail. On my 66th birthday, I'll be celebrating it up in Limerick Jail.
Okay.
Jesus, this whole thing has gone absolutely crazy.
Okay, I want to get some more texts and calls on this. So stay in touch with you, Sean. Thank you so much for taking the call this morning. We'll chat again this side of the 4th of April. If there's any updates, please come back to me immediately. We'd love to know what's going on.
I will, of course. And thank you so much for your help on this and everybody else out there.
All right, Sean Meehan, thank you. There's a fundraiser aimed to help Sean with his legal fees. It's all racked up already, 7 grand. He wants to just see his remaining remaining years with his cat and his dogs and his little log cabin. So there's a Facebook page called Save Sean's Cabin that's been set up. A GoFundMe page called Pensioner Facing Prison for Building a Log Cabin is the GoFundMe, should you wish to check it out. We'll keep a close interest on that one, as we have been for the last couple of weeks. Your thoughts are welcome. Text 0868 104 106. Back after the break.
Text or WhatsApp Neil now. 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prenderville Show on Red FM.
Text 0868 104 106. Get involved in the conversation. So the clock continues to tick for 65 going on 66 year old Sean. April 4th back in court. If he hasn't sorted it out and taken it down by then, he's told to bring a bag because he is off to Limerick Jail. Liam Brown is up in Cashel, actually. A community activist knows this story inside out, as I imagine many, many people do. It's incidentally, it's gone global now at this stage. Certainly, many, many people on Lee side are incensed about the situation. A man who goes to the council looking for help is told, we can't help you, off you go now, so decides to take it upon himself to sort out his own problem. We're all entitled to be warm inside in our beds at night. It's all very well saying, we can't help you, and incidentally, you can't do anything else either to help yourself. But anyway, Liam, good morning.
Good morning, Neil. How are you?
You believe, and the good people of County Tip believe, that Sean is the very first to call their bluff, that there are many others like Sean. Is that right?
I do, Neil, and that's exactly what it is. Look, this problem has been bubbling up under the surface in a lot of places for the last couple of years, really, to be honest. And we had one case in Tipperary down in Carrick and Shore only a couple of months ago, where eventually the person involved was forced to take down his cabin and move back into a house again, effectively making himself homeless. He moved back into a parent's place,
yeah,
making himself homeless. But Sean just said no. As he said there, he was offered to go into his daughter's house, into Karina's house, but he said no. At 66 years of age, he should be entitled to his own place. His daughter and her family, I know her partner very well, Damien, they're entitled to get on with their life. We're in a situation where we're pushing people out of their homes into places where they don't want to be. And Sean just decided, no, not this time. It's time now that the council put their cards on the table, put in proper regulations, allow people to come to them with proposals and to live their own life as they wish to see fit.
Okay, yeah. But in their defence, far be for me to be defending any county council, but Sean didn't do any, he didn't do any of those things. He didn't, he did ask for housing or home, somewhere to live, and they said, no, we can't help you. But he didn't submit any plans in advance of doing the work, sure, he didn't.
Neil, the reality is let's take Sean's case in isolation. Sean just said there, he was forced into a situation because of a marriage breakup. Now, there's a huge amount of marriage breakups and separations happening to people in their 40s and 50s in the country at the moment. And it's getting more rather than less. The reality is a single fella, for example, in their 40s or 50s will not get a council home. They simply won't get one. They don't have the money to buy a new house after they've sold off the family house. And at this stage, they can't afford to rent a place, even if rent was available. Mm. So, marriages are breaking up and people are becoming homeless. I do not want to have log cabins, modular homes built willy-nilly all over the country. But they are a solution, and they are going to have to be a solution to the housing crisis.
Well, Sean's one is particularly beautiful. I mean, this is not
gorgeous,
a dilapidated, second-hand, bought-cheap mobile home thrown up on blocks. This is beautifully done. It fits in very much with the rural aspect of it. It is a log cabin, and it's got beautiful timber fencing and everything. It's a beautifully done job.
Neil, I could, if I wanted to, bring it to 20, 30 different examples of these in my own rural area alone, within 15, 20 miles, because people cannot afford to pay the sort of money that people are looking for a house at the moment. 300,000-350,000 for a house is way beyond people's means, even on very good salaries. They just cannot afford it. You said yourself there, I heard you talking about 20 years ago, the amount of rental properties in Cork. Mm. There's none now. I could open up in Cashel, I could open up def.ie, and if there was one house for rent in Cashel today, I'd be surprised. They're not there. The houses that are being built are starting at 300, 350,000. They're not there. Where are people supposed to live, Neil?
Yeah, but do you accept that the council have laws that they have to follow, and so does a judge with regards to a ruling that's been made on a structure that's put up illegally, that they're... hands to an extent are tied on this. They may have emotions for him and feel for him, but it's more than their job's worth not to follow the letter of the law.
look, I accept that the judge's hands are tied. I have no issue with the judge, and I don't think anybody does. A judge has got to be neutral and has got to just apply the law as he sees it in front of him.
Yeah.
But the council's hands are not tied. The councils have known this was coming for the last couple of years. Sean is not the first person to put up a log cabin. He's not the first person to engage with the council about a log cabin. These things have been coming in and being built for the last couple of years, and people have been begging the councils to give them guidance, to put regulations in place, to give them a chance to go to the council and put these things up properly. And the councils have sat on their hands and not done them.
There's a health aspect as well for him as a pensioner who's gone through all sorts of surgery for prostate and living in a place where originally the toilet bowl water would freeze solid in the winter. Mm-hmm. Like his health, he had bronchitis, and you know, I mean, it's just, it's far from ideal.
It's absolutely terrible in Sean's case, but I tell you one thing, there's not a braver guy in Tipperary than Sean Meehan. And I absolutely commend him for not just doing this for himself, because it would be easy for Sean to scuttle away and hide and probably get sorted. And look, his neighbours may sort him out, but Sean has just said, this is more than Sean Meehan. Okay. This is like, there's a huge amount of people in rural Ireland, especially, who cannot afford houses, who have land, who can afford to put these in. And I'll tell you, Neil, if you want my absolute opinion, I think the people who are making sure councils don't move on this are the property developers that are there at the moment and the banks. Because the last thing they want, Neil, is to have people with the ability to provide their own home for between 60 and 70,000 and 100,000.
So for 60 or 70 grand, you can get purpose-built log cabins would be brought in.
Absolutely.
From, are they brought in from Scandinavia or Germany, and they just, they're ready to go, is it?
You could literally make a phone call when you finish the show at 12 o'clock to Scandinavia or to Poland and have a two-bedroom log cabin brought over here, fitted, put up, erected within a month. For about €60,000.
And that would
be completely fitted out, kitchen, bathroom, the lot.
Yeah.
And this is what's happening. People, they have no choice, Niall. They simply have no choice. It's that or not be able to live. Like, we're constantly hearing that we have 14,000 people homeless in Ireland. We don't. We have 14,000 people in emergency accommodation. We've over 200,000 people homeless.
Yeah, that's probably
the couch
true.
Surfers, yeah, yeah. The people living in their, you know, in their bedroom with families who want to try and get a home, who want to start their life. And like, we're stuck in this past of 3 and 4 bedroom houses, you know, terraced houses with a backyard, front garden as being the only solution. There has to be other solutions. And when people like Sean and other people around the country are providing those solutions for themselves, they're being slapped down and stopped. We have to have this discussion.
Okay, there's fair support for him, though. It's highly unlikely,
huge
considering
support.
All of the public support, that this man will go to jail. Surely, be to God, there'll be some kind of a resolution. Will there?
Well, look, the judge is going to have to remain neutral. And I think, you know, let's be honest about it, a judge is going to say that he cannot have his decision overturned by, you know, public outcry, because, you know, there could be public outcry and all these things. It's down to the council. The council in Tipperary have got to come and sit down with Sean, but not just with Sean. Put in proper regulations. Look, it's happening in Cork, Neil. We're talking about Tipperary. I guarantee you have listeners down there in Cork who are in the same boat, who have sons or daughters or relatives living in log cabins or want to live in them. If you've listeners in Limerick, and I'm sure you have some over the border in Limerick, some over the border in Kerry, this is in every single county in the country. And we have no regulations. And like Sean said, do you know the worst about it? There was modular homes built for Ukrainians in Turles. And it turns out that those cost the state €400,000. That came out in a report a week and a half ago.
For
62, and the average cost is €400,000.
Not for a modular home, though. 400 grand for a modular home.
Excuse me. That's what came out only a week and a half ago. It's 390 something thousand. Per modular home, €407,000. That was what was released by the department only 2 weeks ago. I don't know what they were doing.
Who signed off on that? Per modular home, under 400 grand per home.
Look, that would include, I suppose, site costs and the whole lot. But the actual homes themselves cost 270 to 300,000.
That's dearer than a 3 or 4 bedroom bricks and mortar home.
Exactly. And that's the problem, Neil. When the state or when developers provide these homes, they'll provide them to the state for 300,000 a home. But you can provide it yourself for 70 or 80,000.
I'm not doubting you, but I'd like to see those numbers myself, and I'll endeavour to get them. So just finally for now, Liam, what happens next now? Clock's ticking on 4th of April. What are you going to do next?
What happens next is Sean goes to court in Cashel. He's going to have huge support. There is a rally for Sean if anybody would like to come to it on Saturday at Mother Hubbard's in Cashel. a lot of people would know it. It's off the old Dublin Cork Road, just off the motorway.
Yeah.
There's a huge rally, so we would love people to come out there and support Sean at that. After that, then he goes to court on the 4th of April. The likelihood is, quite frankly, is that he would go to jail. I think Sean has prepared himself for jail. But really, the councils and even the department need to sit down. And everybody is saying at this stage, it's out of their hands.
Okay.
We have 2-3 weeks before it happens. It can't be out of people's hands. Okay. A 66-year-old man should not go to jail for putting a roof over his head.
And what have the locals said about the prospect of maybe construction equipment coming in to take it down?
They'll stand in front of it.
Okay.
They'll stand in front of it. It's as simple as that.
Okay, Liam, thank you for that. Do stay in touch. Any updates, do share. Liam Brown from Cashel. Text 0868 104 106.
The Neil Prendeville Show on Red FM.
Conversation that matters.
Bizarrely, thanks for that, Kevin. He says there's a 40 million euro cost rental modular housing scheme was announced for Galway City. The Monave Road scheme. These are modular houses comprising of 102 homes, including 28 cost rental units, 40 million in total for the 102 homes. That equals €392,156 per home. And it was announced on the 19th of February. Maybe that's what we were referencing there in the last conversation. Modular homes at €392,000 each. You couldn't make it up, lads. Can that man, Sean, get that cabin put on wheels like an old truck or trailer? He'd be okay then without planning, says Nick. That's interesting because Nick then came back and clarified that. He said, get him to get the cabin built on a trailer with wheels because once it's movable, you don't need any planning for it. Surely someone can help out and make that happen. This country is an absolute joke. Ireland, the best country in the world. Yeah, but not if you're Irish. Poor man, the whole country should be up in arms over this. The country's run by cretins. It's pathetic, says Eilish in Waterford. How and ever, can you imagine how much this dude has cost the government with all the planning and the court cases, the taxpayer? If this was a Ukrainian, would there be as much sympathy, I wonder? If I bought a site next to you and put a shipping container down and lived in it, would you mind? Would any of your listeners mind? I'm listening to Sean's story. Well, what can I say about a shipping container? This is not a shipping container. I live in an urban setting where you wouldn't be able to put a shipping container, nor a log cabin, but I would suggest go and look at some of the photographs of where his log cabin is and the finish and the detail he's put into it and the situation that he found himself in with regards to having nowhere to live. There's nothing around him, just trees and fields. I actually think it blends in quite well. I wouldn't want anybody in a shipping container next to me. I'm listening to Sean's story here in Waterford. He should put up CCTV cameras and see who has the guts from Tipperary County Council to take his home down with cameras watching them. Shame on the council. Stand your ground, Sean. I'm from Cashel in Tip. I listen to your show. It's so unfair what's happening to Sean. I don't know him personally, but if he was Ukrainian or perhaps of the traveller community, they wouldn't go near him. They would not destroy his home. His house is kept so neat and tidy. Leave the man alone, says Maria in Golden, County Tipperary. Sean, the man is being victimised by the council. He should ask the judge to put a stay on the order until the county council provides him with suitable housing in the community. And does what then? Knocks a perfectly good log cabin, which would be livable for any family? The country's full of travellers parked up illegally and the council and the guards are afraid of him. Simple as. Sean Meehan is living on his own land and has the place kept immaculate. One more. There's a load of modular homes being installed behind the Charleville Park Hotel. I went checking the planning register and could not see any planning for the modular homes. There could be 50 units gone in there like a little village. It is nearly completed. You probably are aware, maybe not, though, if you're sending that text to me, that emergency legislation was passed in 2020, and that emergency legislation stated that modular homes are not subject to planning laws. Sean's is, though, the log cabin, but not modular homes. I suppose it depends who the modular homes are built for, right? If he's jailed, he should get someone else to move in and keep it going until he's left out of jail. Keep this going. They can't arrest everyone. So thank you for all of those. We'll come back to it in the morning if there are any updates in any way, shape or form. Regarding Sean, good text here. I'm living in Mallow and those log cabins are an absolute eyesore. There is a skip in the middle of the car park, which is such an eyesore for anyone on the main road. I don't quite follow where exactly you're talking about or what was actually built. Regarding Sean, maybe he should offer to build cabins for Ukrainians and then not only would he not have to worry about planning, but he'd be paid to do it. Okay, I understand, but What's being built in the middle of a car park in Mallow? What's being built there? Please let me know. Just come back to me on that one. Is it modular homes in a car park in Mallow for Ukrainian war refugees? And the skip then is next to them in the car park to throw all of their rubbish into? I can understand why you could say that could turn into a bit of an eyesore. Anyway, we will come back to that. Text 0868104106. Pick up the phone on 0818104106. We have more shout-outs for our Monday Munchies of a Tuesday, courtesy of ourselves and Luso in Ballincollig. We've got all sorts of Belgian chocolate delights for you, delivered to the workplace this lunchtime, courtesy of the Red Patrollers and Luso of Cork, based in Ballincollig. So we got all the Belgian chocolates, honeycomb chunks and minty bristle. Get the kettle on. Mallow clusters, salted caramel, chocolate ganache dipped in brownie pieces. Easter bunnies, hand-created Easter eggs with Belgian milk chocolate. It's just an array of beautiful, delightful treats for you, courtesy of Luso. That's our Monday Munchies of a Tuesday this week. For all of the staff at Andercoe Safety in Little Island who are listening, to everybody also at O'Sullivan's Pharmacy in Grange, they're on a go slow after the weekend. The Cork Train Drivers Depot at Kent Station, Keith and all of the gang. Capitol Hill Landscaper, you're listening out in Coachford. Hi, I'm Scott, working for Barry Sheehan Painters and Decorators. We're currently working in the offices across the hall from Red FM. And you are, because I see your vans outside the front door. We wouldn't have far to follow for you guys, would we? It'd be a bit of a fix if they won, though, because they could share it with us, couldn't they? You win and share it with Red FM. That would go down a bomb. Carrigaline Cheese, from all of us working hard down in Carrigaline Cheese, brighten up our day. Eco Blarney, we're hard working, unloading a huge delivery at the moment. ICPOP and the North City team in St. Mary's Health Campus in Groneborough. Morning to Fiona. And just another few. The Steelyard office at Irish and International Traders on the Tremor Road. We have the Bank Holiday Monday, Tuesday Blues, says Catherine O'Hearn and everybody at Childcare, Tigers Childcare in Pembroke Woods. For Martin and all of the staff of the Irish Wheelchair Association and Blackrock who are listening this morning. For Sweet 24 in the Cork Clinic, working hard. Sweet treats would get us through the day. Morning to Lisa P, Sharon, Grace, Lisa M and Patricia. EMC Technical Services in Ballincollig. And a final one for now for the wonderful staff in Marymount Hospice. We recently had our very special Leslie pass away there. He had a brain tumour but was also mentally disabled all of his life. He was 55. What a character this guy was. He brought us all such wonderful happiness to Marymount with his hilarious personality. The last few months we had there in room 11 at St. Christopher's Ward will never be forgotten. And I want to say thanks to everybody from Alan and Leslie and listen, our thoughts on all of the family and all of the friends on that very sad passing, but the staff at Marymount, you're right, the hospice, they do incredible work. So I won't have time now to do any more shout outs for the day that's in it, but we will pick a winner for our Monday Munchies of a Tuesday in a few minutes' time. But just very, very quickly, I mentioned earlier on, I'll come back to everything else in the morning, I promise you that, but I mentioned earlier on a rescue down west along at the weekend that involved surfers who came to the aid. It was a dramatic intervention by some surfers. There was a family of four were caught in a riptide down on Garrettstown Beach at the weekend. It was on Sunday afternoon gone, and they were badly shaken by it because a riptide, very dangerous thing. You're caught in that, you're in trouble. But anyway, I mentioned some surfers who were involved. Amongst them, the man who'll know the story is Aaron O'Callaghan. He's an instructor with Pukana Surf Adventures and a surfer himself. Aaron, good morning.
How's it going, Neil?
What can you tell us happened on Sunday afternoon that led to the rescue of this family of four?
To be honest, I was almost a passenger myself in it. I was just, you know, surfing away, kind of in my own world. I was looking at the water and, I don't know, you'd be used to sea swimmers kind of going out that direction. But just kind of turned around and saw their heads kind of just about poking out of the water. Heard a few shouts going on, so I paddled over just to check everything was okay. And yeah, as I got closer, could hear them shouting, "Help, help."
And where was Carlos? I've got Carlos on WhatsApp. Was Carlos with you at the same time?
He was actually just after going on to show.
Oh, bloody hell, that's not a great phone line. I'll try and fix your phone line. While I'm doing that, I'll talk to Carlos. Carlos, yeah. Good morning.
Good morning.
How okay, you? So were you surfing at the same time as Aaron and saw this family in trouble?
No, just nearly ready for changing my wetsuit. And then saw the person and people at the beach shouting, you know, looking for help. because I was ready, put it back the wetsuit halfway and select my board, and then went straight to help the people in there.
Okay, so you were out of the water, getting changed, got your gear back on, got back up on the board, went out to them. Tell us about that part.
really, and I was too much thinking only.
Okay, any okay, you didn't think. It was, you were just breaking up on me there. You were more instinctive, was it? It was instinctive.
Yeah, it was my instinct to go and try to help the people, you know, was in the rip.
It's a rip current. Yeah?
Yes.
That's and a then, very strong current.
Oh, yeah, yeah, very strong. No, not many people do that to swimming over there, you know, to swimming or paddling in there. Only myself, all the time.
You wouldn't know of the rip currents if you went for a bit of a dip. And people do. So how did, there was four of them, though. How did you guys manage?
Exactly. The mom is stuck in the reef, and she was standing on the rocks, you know, in the one part there. She's standing on the rocks. Entonces, when you saw her, say, only was shouting at her, say, back in there, get out from there, you know, and then a straight paddle back to the people was more far. And then be lucky, you know, I was training a little, all the time training before, every day, exactly in the weekends, and training there. And then, I went help one boy and later the girl, Popera, and then I was holding a strong the board with the one arm.
Sorry, no, just slow down a little bit, because I just want to get a picture as to how you got them to safety on a surfboard.
Oh, that's first time holding get up from my board, tour around the board, and then later I was one boy, and then the sister help you the boy pop around the board. Later the sister pop around my board, and then later I went by the tail. And grab with the tail strong with one arm, and then with the other one, paddle back to the beach.
Okay, Aaron.
Yeah.
Hang on a second, I'll see if that line's any better. Any better now, Aaron? Can you hear me now?
Yeah, I can, of course.
I just, forgive me, am I reading this right that Carlos got four of them back on the board?
We kind of split them between the two of us. So out on the open water, there was the father and the two kids. So I was lucky enough, Carlos saw what was happening, came out on the foam board, which has a good bit of buoyancy on it, so it would be nice and floaty for the extra people on top of it. So he came out, took the two kids, and I popped the father up in mine, and we just kind of put the heads down and just paddled until we could stand again.
Okay, but that's only three. What about Mum?
From what I remember, the mother was on the shore, but to be honest, I wasn't really looking back that way. I just saw father and two kids kind of out, dangling about in the water.
They must have been very shaken after that, were they?
Oh, they couldn't even speak, to be honest.
It was cold.
It was cold. The water was
very cold. Yeah, it was freezing.
If you hadn't been there at the right time at the right place and saw what was going on, we could have an entirely different story this morning.
But to be honest with you, any of the surfers who go down to Garrettstown, anyone who had been on the water at the right place at the right time would have helped, to be honest. It's a lovely community down there.
Yeah, well, listen, absolutely, without doubt. The Coast Guard were there, wasn't there? 115 was deployed from Shannon. The RNLI were out from Kinsale and Cork MacSherry. It was a Coast Guard out from the Old Head. I mean, it was a big incident. Thank God you guys were there in the moment, though.
I suppose. Yeah. That's what we're there for.
Give you the opportunity back in the life. I think so.
Carlos, you're originally from Peru, though. But you fell in love with an Irish woman, did you?
Yes. I saw her and in love.
You saw her and fell in love. Yes. I hope you also love Ireland, do you?
You're getting there, Neil.
Oh, I'm trying. I am trying.
Okay. We got there.
Every day is a challenger.
All right. Well, listen, the phone lines aren't great, but I think we got to understand exactly what you guys did, that wonderful heroic effort that you made to save that family at the weekend. So well done to both of you. I'm going to come up with some kind of a way to thank you and to reward you. I always find that the best way to reward somebody is through their stomach. So I'm going to set something up. I'm going to set up an extra prize. I'm going to set up an extra prize maybe with Luso to deliver some gorgeous chocolatey goodies to you and to Carlos and to Aaron and some of the surfers down there. Would you like that?
Oh, we love it. We sink the boards, but we'll take it gladly.
I won't send too much then for fear of sinking the boards, but we'll organise some lovely chocolatey treats for you from Luso and Ballincollig as a way of saying thank you for your intervention. Well done, lads. Thanks for taking the call. Cheers.
Take care, Aaron. Take care, Carlos.
Apologies for the quality of the phone lines, guys. Thank you. I hope Luso won't mind me asking for a little bit extra this week for these two wonderful individuals, Aaron and Carlos. But our winners for the Monday Munchies of a Tuesday. Good morning to everybody at the operations and transport staff for the National Seaways at the Port of Tivoli. Always listening, and they said that they will share it with their neighbours in Leaside Shipping as well. So, for you, a wonderful treat of the most beautiful chocolatey treats. Chocolate and cake and biscuits and caramel and ganache and all sorts of wonderful Easter bunnies and Easter eggs, courtesy of ourselves and Luso, delivered this lunchtime by Red Patroller. So enjoy all of that. Have a good day. I'll see you tomorrow.
When Cork talks,
Cork people blow my mind.
They talk to Neil Prendeville
on Red FM.